our goal is liberation. Our goal is communism.
Мира и счастья всем вам, друзья мои.
And, you know, we have a unique responsibility to act from the heart of empire, the belly of the beast. The most important thing that we can do is take that empire down from within.
Our role ultimately is to facilitate our own empire's failure in ways that we can, ultimately to overthrow our own empire.
U.S. imperialism is not a thing that can be reformed away. It has to be overthrown through revolutionary struggle.
And to build a mass movement that can use the leverage of workers to hit the kill switch on American imperialism here within the American empire.
Our candidates run as Democrats. We're on the Democratic Party ballot line. We contest the primaries. And when they're in the legislature, they're part of the Democratic Party caucus. But we don't agree with the way the Democratic Party establishment organizes or runs its party apparatus.
It's no secret that the Democratic Socialists of America hate the Democratic Party.
I think we're all on the same page that we hate the Democratic Party. The
Democratic Party is not really our friend. It isn't.
So why are the DSA such major players in the Democratic Party? This odd relationship can be understood with the cuckoo analogy. In nature, the cuckoo survives by trickery. It lays its egg in another bird's nest. The unsuspecting parents raise the imposter as their own until the cuckoo grows strong enough to push the true chicks out. The DSA is the cuckoo inside the Democratic Party.
DSA is not the Democratic Party.
We must separate ourselves from the toxic Democratic Party.
We can put forward a clear, aggressive, principled strategy that pushes back against the Democratic leadership and the Democratic Party as a whole.
DSA candidates run as Democrats in safe blue districts. They slip through low turnout primaries. And once inside, they use the Democratic label as camouflage while advancing an extremist anti-American agenda far beyond the party's mainstream.
Democrat Socialists of America meeting in Denver, more than half of them are wearing the mask. They also look completely deranged. It looks like another Antifa convention or something. And it's very, very sad. You have to understand the psychology of people. They believe they're really going to get a free lunch. So they're already primed to be in a cult. And just like the Nazis wore an armband, these people have purple green hair, you know, look super unhealthy, take SSRIs, take all the deadly shots, and wear the mask because it is a sacrament that they basically buy into the system and whatever it says. I mean, right out of the corporate media, right out of the universities, right out of BlackRock, whatever BlackRock pushes in their ESG scores, most powerful, richest consortium on earth, 87% of world assets, they follow it to a T.
You have to force behaviors. And if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted.
So there they are wearing their masks that don't protect you. They always knew it gives you bacterial pneumonia. There they are completely buying into the system. And you just see how desperate they are. Looking like total victims, totally lost, believing that Mondami and all these people are going to give them something free. For a little while, they'll get something free here and there, but it's only to transfer power into the state.
DSA victories prove their plan works.
I think that the model that we used in New York is 100% replicatable.
But it's the illusion that they're getting something free they like. Just like people buy lottery tickets, even though it's one of the worst investments you need to engage in. It's the same thing as people going to casinos. You know, the house in the end always wins in the aggregate. So it's a big problem. And, of course, the fact that we have a crony capitalist system that's vertically integrated, run by the very same people pushing communism.
It's our duty, DSA, to cultivate this power.
The cuckoo is in the nest, not a Democrat, but Zohran Mamdani, an extremist within the DSA.
We understand that winning an election is not an end. It is a means to an end.
These corporate fascists who've consolidated the wealth of 1%, like 1/100th of 1%, people think that this is capitalism we're under, when it's really monopoly, oligopoly, and where's Teddy Roosevelt to bust up the trust when you need him?
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water, you're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95%+ lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of GalaxyShore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at GalaxyShore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. It is the Ides of July, Wednesday, 15th of July, 2026. Glad you're here with us on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Share that link. Tune in. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. The Joe Rogan episode with Vice President J.D. Vance has dropped. We've got lots of clips from that. Only had time to preview a few of them, so we'll watch them live. But they're pretty good from what I've seen so far. Very excited to look into some of that because he actually gets into some of the stuff we talk about quite a bit, which is things like the actual reason that people are going over to communism and socialism being the utter failure of the American government to restrain capitalism and actually provide a life for their middle class. So we'll go to some of those clips here in just a second. We're also going to do something people keep recommending that I do, which is actually read the bills that we're opposing pertaining to the merger of Israeli and American military infrastructure, technology, and data sharing. There's this bizarre idea that if you read the bill, you'll suddenly not be against it all of a sudden. No, I'm still very much against it. I have read the bills. They are exactly what everybody says they are. They're a bill to merge the Israeli and American military, and it's complete treason, and this is obvious, but there's a bunch of people I hope you're getting paid if you're actually supporting this. There's absolutely no reason to do it, and we'll investigate that. But as I said yesterday, and I tweeted it out today, that for me, this is a red line. And I have not been somebody who's been gung-ho about, you know, let's vote for the Democrats this time around. I've said I understand why it's a strategy people like Nick Fuentes are promoting. I think it's a valid strategy. I think it's true that the Republicans do think that they don't have to earn your vote. I know from personal experience and talking to people higher at the higher up levels, like they literally think like we don't have to do what our voters want because they'll keep voting for us no matter what. They really do think that. So we really do have to dissuade them of that idea. So I'm fine with that. I'm in favor of that. But I've also always said abstaining is more my style. I just can't bring myself to vote for Democrats because despite the biggest threats to our liberties coming from Israel, the Democrats are not far behind and may actually be ahead. However, if this passes, I'm voting Democrat. Again, literally because if the Democrats win, they might actually undo this and charge people that voted for it with treason, which I would be in favor of. So I tweeted that out, and I got a lot of disparate reactions. The funniest one to me is people being like, "Everybody, why are you panicking about this? You're panicking about it." And it's like, oh, am I panicking? I'm against it. I think it's horrible. I think it's stupid. I think it's wrong. I think it shouldn't happen. Is that panicking? No, the panic is we have to do this or Israel will be destroyed by Iran and Muslims will rape your daughter. Pass the bill quick. Quick, we got to give all of our weapons to Israel or else the West will fall. It's like, no, Israel's not even the West. They don't even believe in what we believe in. They're not even fighting for our values. We don't share values with them, really. There's a little bit of an overlap, but when it's convenient. So it's very weird. People are like, you're panicking about this. Like, it just shouldn't exist. It shouldn't exist. It shouldn't be in there. I am. I'm outraged that our government is willingly selling itself out to Israel. Yeah, you should be out. Everybody should be outraged by this. There's not even an argument that this could possibly benefit the American people. And it's very clearly a method by which Israel can continue to receive billions of dollars of American support. They just don't have to actually be responsible for it or, you know, have it delivered to them by an act of Congress. They just want access directly to our bank account so that they can get whatever they want whenever they need it. And it never even has to be told to the American people. Obviously, this is the thing that's happening. Yeah, I said this is my red line. If this passes into law, I'm voting straight Democrat in November. At least the Dems might actually reverse this and charge the Republicans with treason, which they should. So we'll read into it. We'll read them all. We absolutely will. And they just say exactly what everybody says that they that it does. Can y'all go back to that page? What was that community note? Because I hadn't seen that community noted yet. I think it was saying that the cat turd or the cuck turd, cat turd parody. What does that say? We got to know. We got to know if it's real. Can you click on it? Should tell you what it is. The claim that Republicans voted to merge U.S. with military with Israel misrepresents bills enhancing defense cooperation like H.R. 1229 and NDAA provisions on tech sharing and aid. No legislation merges the military. Okay. Okay, sure. Yeah, go ahead and hit no on that one. No, it absolutely does merge the militaries. Like, what a strange rhetorical quibble. What a quibble. We're not merging. We're just, you know, integrating significantly. Oh, okay, great. Crazy. We're also going to be talking a lot about sexual morality on today's show, because I think we just got to, maybe I'll take calls on it. But I'm looking for answers. I'm looking for answers. We're going to try to puzzle out in real time what the hell's going on in the world, because I've not ever been presented or heard or been able to come up with myself a sufficient explanation as to why liberals in this country and lefties around the West feel the need to destroy everything that is even remotely sexual in everyday life, like getting rid of the like ringside girls at boxing matches or the F1 girls or, you know, can't have attractive women in Nike ads anymore. We have to have nothing but, you know, obese monsters because beauty is offensive. But also, how dare you try to stop us putting hardcore pornography in your elementary school? Like, what explains that? So we're going to dig into that. There have been some examples recently of this exact phenomenon, and I'm just trying to get a handle on what the hell is motivating these people. And if you could even define a single principle or a moral imperative, like what do they think is going on? What are their values? We're going to try to figure this out. We're going to study this like an anthropologist. Because I guess the answer, they're all just insane idiots, is insufficient. I guess we need a more thorough answer than they're just insane morons and we can ignore them. I guess we can't ignore them anymore. So let's actually start with some of these J.D. Vance clips, because they just came out, and I don't think Alex had time to even see these because they came out while he was live, and we have a lot of these. Let's go first to clip 30 here. This is J.D. Vance talking about the Republicans passing the SAVE Act, and from what I saw of this clip, say I'm still a little reticent. We talked about this yesterday, but the filibuster, I have a love-hate relationship with. I actually think it's like it shouldn't be necessary, but it is. It's not like I remember one time. Sorry, I'll get to clip in a second. But there's one time that, do you remember the meme? There was a woman with pink shoes and she like filibustered for abortion. Wendy something. You guys remember this? It was in Austin. It was in the Texas State House, and you know, she talked for 18 hours or whatever to save abortion. I think it was. And she like wore pink shoes while she did it. So pink shoes became like a symbol of resistance. It was very obnoxious. It was all very annoying. But I remember at the time, my friend being like, you know, a win for democracy. I remember thinking like, I don't think this is democracy. I don't even like democracy, but a filibuster is kind of the antithesis of democracy. The filibuster is when the minority, and it could be a minority of one, can hold up the proceedings for everybody else. That's like the opposite of democracy. So I've always had this kind of love-hate relationship where I'm like, I like the filibuster because I'm a Republican, because I believe in minority rights, and I believe that just because the majority wants something doesn't mean they have a right to therefore enforce it on the minority. We should have methods by which we can stop these proceedings moving forward. At the same time, it ain't democracy. This isn't an expression of our democratic values. It's a weird little senatorial rule that's been convenient in, you know, stopping certain things over time. So anyway, the issue right now, I think, is that if you get rid of the filibuster, you're opening up the floodgates for what the left wants to do, and that we would have to use the filibuster to stop them from doing. We're not going to be able to stop them if we get rid of the filibuster. So if you get rid of the filibuster, it's got to be ahead of a legislative deluge. It's got to be, you have to have like 15 bills lined up so that you, and every bill has to be like, you know, elections. We have to, you know, massively discriminate against the Democrats in elections. We have to never let them get elected again. Mass deportations, fully funded, no stopping. Comply or we kill you. Like, it's got to be like a bunch of bills that would never pass normally, but if you get rid of the filibuster, you can pass them. And those bills have to, this is a gamble, right? You're gambling the filibuster. You're saying, if we do this, then we will remain in power. We will pass all these bills so that we never are subjected to Democratic bills for which we would need the filibuster to defeat. So if you're going to destroy the filibuster, you got to do it. And then you have to pass a ton of bills right after you do it to guarantee that the Democrats do not take power and then take advantage of this filibuster-free playground that you've now created. So that's my take, and I don't trust the current Republicans to do anything, let alone do enough to sufficiently keep Democrats out of power so that the lack of filibuster is no longer a threat. These people can't pass, you know, free ice cream day. They can't do anything. They can't get the Save Act passed. They have not passed a bill pertaining to the 14th Amendment or birthright citizenship or deportations or anything of the sort. So if you get rid of the filibuster now, you're literally just getting rid of it for the Democrats. You would get rid of the filibuster and then you would immediately get swept out of office. The Democrats would come in and have no barrier to implementing any of the insane programs that they would love to shove down our throats. So let's not get rid of the filibuster until you're ready to actually be serious about literally any of the problems that we're facing right now. Here's J.D. Vance talking about the filibuster.
Federal thing. So we are right now trying to pass the Save America Act. One of its main provisions is a requirement that you do voter ID. And we actually have, I think, a majority of the Senate that would support it. But this is just weird Senate procedural bullshit. There is a subsegment of people who want voter ID but won't blow up the filibuster in order to achieve it. And so they're so married to these old world Senate procedures that they're going to make it impossible for us to pass Save America. Now, we are, for what it's worth, trying to fix that and trying to address these like weird procedural archaic things. It's insane though. Like, I'm sure you hear people talk about the filibuster all the time.
Yeah.
I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole. Here's what the filibuster is. It is a pure Senate rule. It is a creation of the Senate procedures, which basically says that anything that has to do with the budget is a 50-vote threshold. And everything else, non-budgetary, is a 60-vote threshold. Now, as you can imagine, there's some gray area on things that maybe count as budget issues and should be 50, or are not budget issues and count at 60. So what we have tried to persuade the Senate to do is to treat the voter ID as something that can fall within the 50-vote threshold. And there is no law. There's no provision in the Constitution. It is legitimately that there are senators who are so attached to the idea that budget is 50, non-budget is 60, that they're quite literally willing to prevent voter ID in America.
God.
So that's kind of confusing. I'm not sure what I thought that was the nuclear option that, what's his name did. the last Democratic, not the last one, but Harry Reid. Wasn't it Harry Reid did the nuclear option where you move it from 60 to 50 threshold? That's not the filibuster. The filibuster is playing on the Senate's rules for unlimited debate. I'm kind of confused by that. He was not talking about the filibuster, unless I missed something. But the whole point of the Senate was that it was where bills slowed down, that like you could have a popular movement that like really wanted something and they could jam it through the House really quickly. But then the Senate was supposed to be where it's like, okay, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's not get all, you know, caught up in the moment and let's really discuss this. And so there's unlimited debate time, which is what the filibuster is, which is why you have things like that Wendy lady wearing the pink sneakers, because you have to actually stand there and talk because it's a filibuster, because the provision is you can debate endlessly. So as long as you get up and are talking, they can't call time on you. And now there's like a workaround where it's like, look, do we really have to stand here and talk? Do we really have to do this performative thing where we talk the whole time? Can we just call out filibuster and you can just, let's just pretend I've been talking for 10 hours and just I'll see you here in 10 hours and let's pretend I was talking the whole time. So I'm a little bit unsure about, you know, what J.D. Vance was exactly talking about there, except that whether it's the filibuster or the 50 vote, 60 vote rule, it is perhaps the most frustrating thing about American politics right now is when these little board game rules get in the way of us saving our country, that we're trying to, you know, do dramatic actions to actually rescue our country from the edge of disaster, and we can't do it because the monopoly rules say you can't pass go without collecting $200. And it's like, really, really, this very arbitrary and inexplicable rule is just stopping us from doing what's right, even though it's obvious that this is the right thing to do. It is a little bit frustrating. It is. The thing is, though, this might be a good little dichotomy to display. Let's go to clip 31 here. So we just heard J.D. Vance on Joe Rogan talk about how the Republicans will not end the filibuster or change Senate rules at all in order to pass much needed common sense voter security measures. Meanwhile, here is the co-chair of the DSA talking about their plan once they're in power. Let's watch.
Who live in this country.
So would you like to abolish the Senate?
That's part of our platform, and we don't think that's extreme. We think it's a change that would help make this country more democratic.
We're going to get rid of the Senate, you know, to make it more democratic. Yeah, we're going to become an empire to protect democracy. So it's just a little informative dichotomy for you there. Republicans won't even change an arbitrary rule in the Senate. The DSA is like, we will be abolishing the Senate. So it's like, all right, tell you what, which is more important to you, preserving this one little Senate rule or the Senate itself? Because that's essentially the choice you're being asked to make. Either adhere to the Senate rule book that somebody came up with, don't pass the bill, get blown out in the midterms, and then have the DSA sweep in and eradicate the Senate itself. So if you care about the Senate rules, you should break the Senate rules. This is the situation we're in across the board here. If we care about the Constitution, we cannot have the Constitution tying our hands behind the back while we fight for the Constitution. Do you understand this? So that's the dichotomy there. J.D. Vance complaining about the Republicans refusing to change the rules of the Senate, the DSA being like, we don't think it's radical to abolish the Senate. We think that's common sense to make us more democratic. Okay. The Senate might be the most democratically elected out of all the branches of government. I mean, obviously, the Supreme Court has very little democratic involvement whatsoever, except that the senators you vote for, confirm the pieces, but that's, you know, a couple steps removed. The executive branch, obviously we have the Electoral College, and while it's democratic to a certain degree, the breakdown of the Democratic College and the states, it's actually very much what a republic is. And you have to, and that is what a republic is. And you remember the Senate used to be not even elected. Right now, the Senate is elected by popular vote statewide. That is the most democratic method by which we choose leadership, right? It's the whole state. It's not even a single, you know, congressional district where you might have, you know, outsized influence compared to another congressional district of an equal time. It's the most democratic version. I guess you could make the argument that because there's two per state, no matter what the size of the state is, that that gives more weight to the smaller states. But here I am treating this as if they are actually thoughtful about political contract. They don't care. They just want power, and they see the Senate as a barrier to their power. So, yeah, screw them. No, we should go back to an undemocratic version of the Senate. The senators should be appointed by state legislatures. That's actually how it should work. We should be a republic. We should vote for representatives who themselves vote for representatives who themselves make law. But we're more democratic. And the more democratic we become, the worse everything gets. It's called a dependency. Let's go to clip 32 here. This is J.D. Vance talking about Republicans creating the conditions that fuel the rise of socialism. So this is what I've been begging Republicans to say forever. Let's see how J.D. Vance delivered it.
Does the socialism thing scare me? Yes. Is it the wrong solution? Yes. But one thing I try to persuade my fellow Republicans of is socialism is the alternative if we don't have a pathway to give people a sense that the system is not rigged and that the American dream is attainable. That's like our job. That's what we have to do. I'm not saying Rome was built in a day. It's not going to be easy to undo some of these economic trends. But man, we ran the experiment. We ran the experiment of offshoring all of our industrial jobs, of becoming a services and finance economy, and allowing Wall Street to come in and buy every asset of modern life and turn it into an investable, you know, line goes up asset. And what has that done? It's created a generation of kids who kind of are attracted to socialism. We have to fix that problem.
Well, kids that do feel, and you're correct, and I agree with you, the system is rigged. Kids feel like there are no options other than to burn it down.
Yes.
And that's the problem. And because they feel very frustrated.
And this is part of our job, is to provide an option that isn't burn it down, but is not just doing the same things that we've done for the past
40 years. They're also terrified.
That's exactly right. That was very well said. I would just say the one thing that's missing is the acknowledgement. I guess he sort of acknowledged it there at the end. That you do need to change things, that the way things are going are not good. It's not just socialist talking points that are telling people that. It's reality. It's statistical. It's experiential. I mean, people know that the economy doesn't work because they're trying to get jobs and create families, and they can't do it. So you can't just say, you know, communism, socialism isn't the right answer. And you have to acknowledge and recognize that, as I guess he did. He said, you know, we tried the offshoring thing and it didn't work. But I would say the way that you take that a step farther, and the way you actually pitch that, you say, I'm not a communist or a capitalist. I'm an American. I'm in favor of Americanism, and America has always had in our DNA opposition to major corporate control. Why do you think Teddy frickin' Roosevelt was the trust buster? That's what we need. There's nothing communist about trust busting. That's as American as apple pie. So you got to pitch that. That it's not just that, you know, our system's better. It's like, no, our government has to actually live that out.
And a microscopic tag being implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
There you go. That's me. DSA. Let me be perfectly clear. DSA is the enemy. They're the worst. They really are. But the Republicans aren't any better. So it's not like this is a good idea. It's like, but they're waving a Palestinian flag. It's like, okay, and 50% of the Republican representatives have an Israeli flag outside their office. This isn't a good. So I got to a vote for one foreign bloc or another foreign bloc. I'll go for the one that isn't trying to merge itself with our military inextricably so that they have complete and total unrestricted access to all of our secrets and all of our technology. Yeah, no, I'll go for the idiots. Thank you. So J.D. Vance did exactly what every Republican should be doing, which is, well, at least he hinted at understanding the issue. He didn't actually make the case, but he did recognize that, yes, the American people, especially young people, are desperate for a solution, and you can't just condemn the solutions they're being offered. You have to actually offer a solution of your own. Not that complicated. And here's why. New Labor Department data just dropped. Corporate profits have risen 47% since 2020. Workers' wages have gained 12% in that same period. Meanwhile, groceries are up 35%, Rent is up 40%. Utilities up 28%. Your paycheck grew by 12%. Your bills grew 35%. The math is simple. You're getting poorer every year, even when you get a raise. You can't budget your way out of this. The system is designed so your income can never catch up to your expenses. That's not an accident. That's policy. Yeah, and that's a problem. And this needs to be corrected. And the way you correct this is by using the American government to dismantle monopolies, break up giant corporations, force them to compete, and also stop hiring Indians. Also stop hiring foreigners so you can pay them less than living wage. Also get rid of welfare so you don't have major corporations like Walmart subsidizing the wages they're able to offer by using taxpayer money. There's a lot of stuff you could do. None of it's being done. Instead, we are opening up the pension funds so that private equity can, you know, stave off bankruptcy for another couple years by pilfering away your trillions of dollars saved up. So it's not even just that, like, again, it's not that people are being propagandized into socialism. It's being proven that capitalism is exploitative, and our government, the people that claim to represent the American people, are in bed with the big business. So what are we going to do? It's like, just once again, we're being offered this choice between two utterly terrible options. And whether it's, you know, foreign aid or corporatism, the Republicans are also the bad guys. They might not be as bad, but yeah, this is the choice we're being offered. Either, you know, surrender your country to a bunch of foreign hostile communist subversives, or allow your country to be taken over by Jewish oligarchs. And it's like, how about we just stand up for ourselves and not be pulled down either one of these ridiculous and self-destructive lanes? This is retarded. Let's go now to let's go to clip three here. This is J.D. Vance and Joe Rogan talking about the Time article we covered yesterday, showing, and we mentioned it, we'll cover it maybe a little more today, the Israeli influence operation that is being carried out by Brad Parscale, Salem Media, and many other agents of Israel here in the United States. Let's watch clip three.
But I definitely think you have seen this very discreet, extremely well-funded campaign to try to derail the negotiation and try to derail the deal. And, you know, there's this Time article that came out yesterday. A friend sent it to me. It's like worth reading because it lists a bunch of people who have quite literally been paid by a former Trump campaign person who was himself paid by certain elements within the Israeli government. And those people are attacking me viciously for quite literally trying to accomplish the negotiation objective that the president set for the country. So
what is their position? Like, are they attacking you how?
Oh, it's social media posts. It's, you know, they're leaking to reporters. They're attacking me obsessively, saying that we should not be negotiating with Iran. We should just keep the military campaign going indefinitely. And that is their explicit position. And coming after me saying that, you know, people have come after me and say that I'm influenced by Qatar, that I'm influenced by foreign governments, that, you know, I take my marching orders from Tucker Carlson. And there's just so much bullshit out there. When what I'm actually trying to do is accomplish what the President of the United States told me to accomplish, which is a settlement of this that accomplishes our objectives. Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. We have the free flow of oil and gas. And like, I should be clear, you know, I don't actually mind. I don't mind that the, you know, let's say certain elements of the Israeli government want to criticize the deal or have disagreements about the deal. I don't even mind an effort to try to influence, you know, foreign governments try to influence the United States all the time. You know, Israel does it. Other countries do it. It's just sort of the nature of the beast. What bothers me is actually when Americans allow, meaning American leadership, allows that influence to affect their judgment and to affect what they are advocating for. That's what really bothers me. People are always going to try to influence the United States of America, whether they're allies of ours or whether they're enemies of ours. But again, when I open up the pages of Time magazine and I see that there's a literal foreign influence campaign being funded to tank the very deal that I was pursuing, and oh, by the way, many of the people who were receiving that money were actually attacking me in completely dishonest ways, you know, my response to that is, well, go to hell. I'm going to do what I have to do for the American people. I represent Americans first.
So again, yeah, here's the Time article. Trump's ex-campaign manager is running an Israeli influence operation targeting the MAGA base. You know, I think the difference here is that Israel is supposed to be our allies. They're propagandizing the American people to support policies that are against American interests, but in favor of Israeli interests. They're doing this at a time when America has put itself in an extremely tenuous position on the behalf of and for the sake of Israel's territorial ambitions. So to then, you know, try to sponsor a propaganda campaign to get the American people to demand that we keep the war going because it benefits Israel. I mean, this is sinister beyond description. And the fact that it's being carried out by Trump's former campaign manager and being paid for by a bunch of Trump's biggest donors, who Trump is doing all of this for, this is different than your typical, you know, foreign influence operation, which is bad on the face of it already. But you have to understand that it's about more than just the money. It's about the connections. It's about the networks. It's about the coordination and collaboration in media so that a singular message is being put across, which convinces people that this is the most popular position, which, you know, changes their perception. The point is, this is beyond a lobbying campaign. It would be different if it was a lobbying campaign where foreign governments are going to DC to try to convince American politicians that America should be involved in, you know, one of their issues overseas. This is foreigners and Americans paying to propagandize Americans, knowing that they can create public pressure that they can use to manipulate the politicians. It's like more sophisticated, it's more devious, and it's more subversive than, you know, your typical influence campaign. And of course, it's targeted at the very people who are supposed to be Israel's allies and who have done so much for Israel. So it's like an insult. It's like a act of disrespect. You've done so much for them, but the moment that our interests diverge, there's no understanding from them. There's no, you know, requisite, appropriate return of sentiment from Israel. We do everything for them. We ask them for a minor favor, and suddenly they launch a multi-million dollar campaign to try to destroy your entire political career. It's typical. It's very typical. Vance's tough talk on Israel is alienating some Jewish GOP donors. Okay, well, good. Maybe we can finally get back to actually doing something for the American people for once. Like, okay. Oh, no, please don't. Yeah, it's I'm glad that he's, like, personally offended by it. He should be. It should be personally offensive to him. But I wish he'd go farther. I really do. Let's go to clip 21 here, where J.D. Vance, again, on the topic of Israel, calls himself a reasonable moderate. Let's watch.
But again, when I open up the pages of Time magazine and I see that there's a literal foreign influence campaign being funded to tank the very deal that I was pursuing, and oh, by the way, many of the people who were receiving that money were actually attacking me in completely dishonest ways, you know, my response to that is, well, go to hell. I'm going to do what I have to do for the American people. I represent Americans first. And that's the way that I've tried to do this job. And I, you know, Joe, the crazy thing is, I'm like, people don't realize this. I'm actually in this, you know, there's this massive pro-Israel, anti-Israel debate in the United States of America. I'm like the reasonable moderate. And I think that's what so many people don't realize is, you know, I've been accused of being an anti-Semite. I've been accused,
For what reason?
Quite literally for I've been accused of trying to, I guess some people say that I've insulted the Jewish religion, which is insane. Like I have a ton of respect for the Jewish religion.
But
I mean, if you talk
what
about
specifically did you say that?
I don't know. I've never heard a good compelling argument for why I'm an anti-Semite, even though I've been accused of being an anti-Semite by many people. But it's what I say to these guys is, look at public opinion. Look at the way young Republicans versus Republicans over the age of 65 approach this issue. Like, right now, Israel is losing the public opinion battle in the United States of America. It is a simple and obvious fact. Donald Trump has said that publicly. It's a simple and obvious fact.
Why do you think
fact.
That is?
Well, let me finish this point.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, my attitude is towards this is Israel is an ally. Like France or like the United Kingdom, we're going to have disagreements with them. We're going to have agreements with them. There are areas where we're going to have similar interests and areas where our interests are going to diverge. So my approach to this is to say, you know what? When we're partnered, great, let's work together. And we're not, let's just be honest about it. And I, for that, people attack me for being an anti-Semite or anti-Israel, and they don't see the writing on the wall that I'm actually just the guy advocating for a normal relationship with a normal country that's based around shared interest as opposed to based around, you know, something else. So why is Israel losing American public opinion?
Well, the narrative is that Israel has a very disproportionate effect on American politics.
Yeah, I see that. I see that narrative. I mean, I actually think that they look, do they try to influence American politics? Yes. But like I said earlier, a lot of other countries do. I think
to
some
the extent
are,
that Israel does,
I think
though?
Some are better at it than others. I think the Israelis are definitely more effective at it than most. But I wouldn't say that they're the only effective country by any means that tries to influence American politics. I just think you have to be self-aware about it. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's a country of 9 million people. We have 330 million people. And so, of course, they're going to try to persuade Americans. They're going to try to move Americans in one direction or another. I think that's just the nature of the beast.
But it's more than that. The concern is that they're spying on American politicians, that there's concerns about funding, there's concerns about influence, there's concerns about whether or not politicians are whether they're aligned with Israel or whether they're aligned with the United States first.
Well, there's certainly like I definitely get those concerns, but my sense is that the way that all foreign influence works in the United States is people try to manipulate American public opinion, and then from manipulating a public opinion, they try to get the outcomes that they want. I mean, this thing is a very good example of this.
You know, I really do want to like J.D. Vance. Like, I really do. And, you know, he definitely gets it more than other Republicans. I mean, the answer, that answer is a good example. The answer about communism was a good example. But I'm not buying it. I don't know. I can't buy it. So a couple things there. He says he's a reasonable moderate when it comes to Israel. Me too. I'm a reasonable moderate too. I just think that their entire leadership class should be subjected to Nuremberg trials, and the entire state itself should be dismantled and governed by some sort of international body, or just America should have it as a colony. So I'm the reasonable moderate. Actually, that's the moderate position, because to the left of me, just about everybody wants Israel to literally burn and everybody in it to burn. And they wouldn't shed a tear if every single Israeli baby was put on a spike. That's actually the sort of anti-Israel position on average in America these days. To be at all pro-Israel in this moment is actually an extreme position. He's like, I'm the reasonable moderate. I just think we should go to war so that they can bomb people in Lebanon. I'm the reasonable moderate that just wants to endlessly supply weaponry for them to kill innocent people. You know, moderately. I'm a moderate like that. No, the moderate position is Israel must be destroyed. That's the moderate position. The extreme position is that Israel should continue to exist at all in any form after what they've done to the world. That's an extreme position. How dare you? And then the other extreme position is everyone in Israel should die. I'm the peaceful moderate that just thinks they're entire governmental system should be shattered and cast into the wind. But, you know, I'm alone here in my moderation. Yeah, so the reasonable moderate just wants to go to war with Iran on behalf of Israel. That's the reasonable thing to do. The reasonable thing to do is to fully merge our government with Israel so that they can no longer have to even ask us for money, but just get, you know, direct deposit into their bank account. He says, I want to treat Israel, they're our ally. Now, I would ask what proof he's seen of that. Allyship should go both ways. I don't think they do anything for us. They really don't. They really don't. You could say we get technology from them or whatever, but is that an ally as a trade partner? Are they allies? Are they allies with us? I think that's debatable. What's not debatable is that Israel is not a normal country. He says, I think we should have a normal relationship with them like a normal country, but they're not a normal country. They're not like France or England. They're not Western. They're not a normal country in any possible way you could imagine. No normal country has, you know, a massive, wealthy, and influential population in America to sway the American people to whatever they want. A normal country hasn't been at war with its neighbors for 100 years and routinely massacres hundreds of them, dozens of them on a daily basis. That's still happening, still every single day. I could read you a list of dozens of people that Israel has outright murdered that day. They're not a normal country. Why would we have a normal relationship with them? Our relationship with them is not normal, and they are not normal. Our relationship is one of slavery and subjugation and endless forgiveness and endless support. And any time that we even slightly break from their demands, then they try to utterly destroy us. Like, that's the other thing that's sort of missing from J.D. Vance's read of all of this, is like, where is any sense of balance or reasonableness when it comes to Israel? It's not, you know, he's talking about a multi-million dollar nationwide PR campaign funded by Israel, calling him an anti-Semite, trying to destroy him, trying to ruin a peace process. Why? Because they were like offended that they were asked to stop blowing up Lebanese people for a little while. Again, this isn't reasonable. This isn't just, well, oh, it's just another interest. As if that's even a good comparison. It's like, who should we compare it to? The Somalis? I mean, what other foreign population in America is beneficial at all? So it's not even a good argument, but if you line them up, I'd say Israel has probably cost us the most and benefits us the least out of any of them. Let's go finally to clip number 33 here. This is Vance talking to Rogan about Jeffrey Epstein and his connection to the Israeli upper crust. Let's watch.
He clearly had connections to the highest levels of American intelligence. He clearly had connections to the highest levels of Israeli intelligence. In fact, one of the interesting things the Epstein saga reveals about, and I try to make this point, is one of the reasons why I'm always careful and I say there are some elements within the Israeli government who don't like our peace process, because there are a lot of elements within the Israeli government that actually do like our peace process. They recognize that this indefinite campaign is not good for them either. And the Epstein thing is interesting, because as much as I know, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu, not a particularly popular person in the United States of America right now, Epstein seemed to be connected to the elements of the Israeli deep state that were left of center. Like, I've always found that fascinating. It wasn't like he was super connected to the right of center of Israeli politics. America, he was connected across.
There is no left or right in Israel. Let's just lay that out right now. There is no meaningful difference between Ehud Barak and Bibi Netanyahu. You know this if you read Rise and Kill First. I mean, Ehud Barak, like, he got famous because he dressed up like a woman and went into Lebanon and killed a bunch of people as part of an assassination Operation Spring murder campaign against the PFLB, I believe. So, like, it's like, oh, he was involved in the right wing of Israeli politics. It's like, oh, really? So, Ehud Barak, one IDF assassin, got his start as a hired killer, foreign operative He's very different than Benjamin Netanyahu, who, by the way, held exactly the same positions in exactly the same organizations. There is no meaningful difference between the left and the right in Israel when it comes to matters of foreign policy or self-preservation. They're all on the same page. They're all on the same side. This is another distraction, which is why I say I can't bring myself to fully trust J.D. Vance, because he knows this. But he's playing the game. He's playing the left and right game. And again, I'm just sick of the assumption that it's that the well-being of Israel is the only thing that matters. And what I mean by that is, even in that argument, he's going, this is why I specifically talk about elements of the Israeli government that are against the peace process, because elements of the Israeli government are in favor of the peace process because they understand that this extended war isn't good for them either. I don't care what's good for them. Well, why do you think I care what's good for them? Why is that a thing? It's like, I'm in favor of, you know, these Israelis because they have a different view of what will selfishly benefit them and them alone. It's like, what about any concern for America? What about if we are their number one ally that they depend on for absolutely everything? How about they be in favor of the peace process because it's good for us and it's good for humanity, and because war is bad and this is a pointless exercise in futility, which threatens major catastrophe across the world with shortages of oil and fertilizer and everything else? How about you just are in favor of peace for that reason? But that can't ever be the case. Every argument against Israel has to be made in a form in which you are explaining how actually you're arguing for the benefit of Israel. And it's like, I'm sick of this. I don't care if they think this is best for Israel if we have peace. We should have peace because it's best for us, and Israel should deal with it because they're not us. And I don't care what happens to them. But the final thing is just the absurd sort of pantomime when they go, Israel's PR is really taking a hit. What do you think could be behind that? What do you think it could be? Why do you think it is? Is it TikTok? Do you think it's TikTok? It's all of the babies they're killing. It's all of the endless videos of all of the obviously innocent people, obviously targeted by Israel for murder because they're psychopaths. It's the stories about how they rape people to death in their prisons, and then the person who tried to expose that got harassed unto suicide. It's because they're bad people, and they don't control the media entirely now. Social media has allowed that fact to break through their cordon, break through their firewall. And now people are just seeing who they really are, and we all hate them because they're bad and evil. Glad I could help you figure that out. It's a real puzzler.
Bigly took 2 years to do this, our great sponsor. I'm not bitching. It's amazing. They got the highest rated. We've published the studies, showed it to you, the big third-party testing firms. The highest quality, gravity-fed filters, cuts out all the thousands of different forever chemicals like atrazine and glyphosate to non-detectable levels, meaning zero, basically. Can't detect it. That's the highest rating, with the most beautiful stainless steel. 3-gallon system. You can get the stand if you want to. A lot of people don't even need the stand. Looks great in your kitchen, great at your business, but the most important thing is it cuts all these toxins out. This is the number one thing you should do for your family, for people, your coworkers. This is no more bottled water, no more, you dump swamp water in this, pool water, whatever, it cuts everything out, and it funds the operation. Everybody needs one of these. This is a home run. I am so impressed, because I've been bitching at Bigly. Like 2 years ago, we started, hey, we need this, here's the ratings, this is the highest thing, I want stainless steel. You can go out and find the company, the manufacturers, go to them with the highest quality, lowest price. They're selling crap. They don't even have the good filters. This isn't stainless steel. It's plastic. For more than this, get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. Commit to yourself to get the poisons out of the water. It's one of the biggest moves you can make to take control of your life, and it funds this operation. Order it now at thealexjonesstore.com. Take action. And there's a big sale that's going to end Sunday night at midnight. And that is Ultimate Life Force, the ultimate spike protein cardiovascular booster for everybody. That is 50% off. Bunch of other deals. They're going to end soon at thealexjonesstore.com. Widest selection of Patriot apparel and more. And the live feeds of the show are at thealexjonesstore.com as well.
Nice try, globalist. But Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving.
Yeah.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I mean, our goal is liberation. Our goal is communism.
Мира и счастья всем вам, друзья мои.
And, you know, we have a unique responsibility to act from the heart of empire, the belly of the beast. The most important thing that we can do is take that empire down from within.
Our role ultimately is to facilitate our own empire's failure in ways that we can, ultimately to overthrow our own empire.
U.S. imperialism is not a thing that can be reformed away. It has to be overthrown through revolutionary struggle.
And to build a mass movement that can use the leverage of workers to hit the kill switch on American imperialism here within the American empire.
Our candidates run as Democrats. We're on the Democratic Party ballot line. We contest the primaries. And when they're in the legislature, they're part of the Democratic Party caucus. But we don't agree with the way the Democratic Party establishment organizes or runs its party apparatus.
It's no secret that the Democratic Socialists of America hate the Democratic Party.
I think we're all in the same meeting that we hate the Democratic Party. The
Democratic Party is not really our friend. It isn't.
So why are the DSA such major players in the Democratic Party? This odd relationship can be understood with the cuckoo analogy. In nature, the cuckoo survives by trickery. It lays its egg in another bird's nest. The unsuspecting parents raise the imposter as their own until the cuckoo grows strong enough to push the true chicks out. The DSA is the cuckoo inside the Democratic Party.
DSA is not the Democratic Party.
We must separate ourselves from the toxic Democratic Party.
We can put forward a clear, aggressive, principled strategy that pushes back against the Democratic leadership and the Democratic Party as a whole.
DSA candidates run as Democrats in safe blue districts. They slip through low turnout primaries. And once inside, they use the Democratic label as camouflage while advancing an extremist anti-American agenda far beyond the party's mainstream.
Democrat Socialists of America meeting in Denver, more than half of them are wearing the mask. They also look completely deranged. It looks like another Antifa convention or something. And it's very, very sad. But you have to understand the psychology of people. They believe they're really going to get a free lunch. So they're already primed to be in a cult. And just like the Nazis wore an armband, these people have purple green hair, you know, look super unhealthy, take SSRIs, take all the deadly shots, and wear the mask because it is a sacrament that they basically buy into the system and whatever it says. I mean, right out of the corporate media, right out of the universities, right out of BlackRock, whatever BlackRock pushes in their ESG scores, most powerful, richest consortium on earth, 87% of world assets, they follow it to a T.
You have to force behaviors. And if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted.
So there they are wearing their masks that don't protect you. They always knew it gives you bacterial pneumonia. There they are completely buying into the system. And then you just see how desperate they are, looking like total victims, totally lost, believing that Mondami and all these people are going to give them something free. For a little while, they'll get something free here and there, but it's only to transfer power into the state.
DSA victories prove their plan works.
I think that the model that we used in New York is 100% replicatable.
But it's the illusion that they're getting something free they like. Just like people buy lottery tickets, even though it's one of the worst investments you need to engage in, it's the same thing as people going to casinos. You know, the house in the end always wins in the aggregate. So it's a big problem. And of course, the fact that we have a crony capitalist system that's vertically integrated, run by the very same people pushing communism.
It's our duty, DSA, to cultivate this power.
The cuckoo is in the nest, not a Democrat, but Zohran Mamdani, an extremist within the DSA.
We understand that winning an election is not an end. It is a means to an end.
These corporate fascists who've consolidated the wealth of 1%, like 1/100th of 1%, people think that this is capitalism we're under, when it's really monopoly, oligopoly, and where's Teddy Roosevelt to bust up the trust when you need him?
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving.
Do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time. Uncensored. Unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I want to go down to a video of Todd Blanche, clip 34 here. This is him testifying under oath about the Epstein files. And we'll take a listen here, but I think he's going to lie about it. Because the law that was passed said they had to put out the Epstein files. They were only allowed to redact things for certain either national security, you know, sources, revelations, or, you know, they didn't want to reveal innocent people without actually accusing them of a crime. But if they were going to redact anything, they needed to provide to Congress the reason why they were redacting it, to show that the reason they were redacting it was in line with the prescribed appropriate reasons to redact something. They instead redacted things that had Trump's name in it, redacted things they just felt would look unfavorable to them. That's illegal. They broke the law. Who's going to hold them to account when they're the guardians of the law? That's the question. Here is Todd Blanche, who just received a ringing endorsement from Donald Trump for all the great work he's done. Here's him explaining some of that great work. Let's watch.
How many more pages are there?
That are responsive, we're not aware of any.
How about that in the department's opinion are not responsive?
Well, from what we collected, about 3 million that were just nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein or the case at all.
Okay. Why don't you just release everything? Just let it rip.
Well, that would be against the law. Because the only reason we could release the 3 million we did is because of the Epstein Transparency Act. There are federal laws that prohibit the release of case files. And the Epstein Transparency Act was very explicit and specific about what could be and should be released.
Other than to himself. Well, first, we can agree, can we not?
Yeah. So it'd be illegal for me to comply with the orders of Congress. I don't believe you. I mean, we, there's no way that's true. They're lying. They're lying. They're withholding the Epstein files. They're breaking their own law. This actually is the death of democracy. Now, for all of the crying and rending of clothing over January 6th, the actual death of democracy is when you actually go through the appropriate procedure to pass a law and the executive just decides they don't want to. Why? Because they're perhaps included in some of the criminal activity inside the files. That's the death of democracy. That's the death of not democracy, really, because we're not a democracy. Our Republican system of checks and balances. The actual thing we should be concerned about preserving. But that is being ever disintegrated right before us. We got a lot of political news to talk about, as well as, of course, the Iran war. Iran, U.S. has begun a new wave of strikes on Iran. These strikes are designed to further degrade military capabilities Iranian forces have used to attack commercial shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, U.S. Central Command said in a post on X. The Reuters Iran briefing is where this is from. Can we just stop already, like, for the love of God? I just don't understand what the point of any of this is. We have not achieved any of our objectives. Those objectives seem to be getting further and further away. And at a certain point, we're just going to have to call it. Like, what are we waiting for exactly? I don't understand what we're waiting for. Should we dig in a little bit more to this Time article? Because we only touched on it yesterday, but there's a ton of very interesting information in it. Trump's ex-campaign manager is running an Israeli influence operation targeting the MAGA base. After the U.S. and Iran agreed to a ceasefire deal on June 17th, a senior U.S. official was monitoring the online reaction, and they noticed something surprising. President Trump's aides had expected his supporters to celebrate the agreement. Instead, online influencers in Trump's MAGA movement were excoriating it on social media. One shared an Israeli op-ed titled, "You could have been the greatest president of all, but you failed." Several posted the same video of Qatar's prime minister appearing to snub J.D. Vance in Israel, arguing it showed regional powers dismissing the Trump administration's naivete. Others accused Trump of surrendering before achieving his stated objectives of eliminating Iran's nuclear program. Many of the posts appeared almost simultaneously with similarities in language and tone. The official began collecting screenshots and came to believe that this wasn't a coincidence. Tracing tweets by prominent members of the online right, the official came to believe there was an unlikely figure at the center of all the criticism, Trump's former campaign manager and digital guru, Brad Parscale. Last September, the global ad agency Havas hired Parscale's firm, Clock Tower X, to conduct a digital campaign on behalf of the State of Israel, according to Foreign Agents Registration Act, FARA filings reviewed by Time. Under the agreement, Parscale's operation would produce 100 original pieces of content each month, with at least 80% aimed at Generation Z audiences across TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and podcasts. In a services agreement draft included in the filing, Parscale also pledged to amplify the campaigns across social media and through integration of narrative messaging into Salem Media Network properties and aligned distribution channels, referring to the Christian Conservative Broadcasting and Publishing Company, where he serves as chief strategy officer. Parscale vowed the effort would produce at least 50 million digital impressions per month, as well as influence how AI tools such as OpenAI, ChatGPT, Anthropic's Claude, and Google's Gemini characterized Israel and the war. For all this, Israel agreed to pay Clock Tower $1.5 million per month. Now, is any of this going to actually lower anti-Semitism? Probably not. If anything, it's only confirming the most anti-Semitic tropes and conspiracy theories that exist out there, including the fact that AI is being manipulated by them to be on their side, when in reality it should just be a truth machine. Then talks about some of the people involved in this, including Ayel Yacobi. Three people familiar with the campaign describes a messaging operation run through a network of interconnected firms seen by Parscale or other firms he owned or created, such as Campaign Nucleus and Influenceable, in which he now owns a minority stake. Through private group chats, they say, conservative influencers received suggested language for posts on social media sites such as X, Instagram, and TikTok. They were compensated based on impressions and engagement their content generated. On the website, Clock Tower X says it developed an influencer ecosystem that includes managed networks that amplify narratives through credible, distributed voices. It remains unclear how much Parscale's outfits paid creators as part of the Israeli campaign. Another recent influenceable campaign offered influencers a base payment of $2,250 plus $1 for every 1,000 views up to 2 million views, allowing influencers to earn as much as $4,250 per post, according to internal text messages reviewed by Time. People who participated, most of whom asked for anonymity, fearing reprisals, rejected the suggestion that there was anything improper about the practice. Parscale said none of the money from the FARA registered contract had been used to pay influencers, arguing that doing so would require them to disclose the source of their funding. He says other Christian organizations hired his firms, such as Influenceable, to support Israel in the wake of October 7th attacks, but declined to identify them. So you're making over $4,000 per post if you get enough impressions. But here's the key with this. You use your influencer networks to maximize impressions. So, and here's a little behind the scenes secret for you. Here's how we operate behind the scenes. I'll tell you this with complete honesty. The only time I've ever, to my knowledge, to my memory, like I put stuff out there and my sort of philosophy is like, if it's good, people will see it, they'll share it, they'll get it around. I don't like asking for help. I don't like asking people to share stuff. I never do. When I made the Eighth Front documentary, I really wanted it to do well. So I sent it out to everyone I knew with a account over 100,000 and was like, please, please share this. I worked really hard on it and I think you'd enjoy it. And they did. Luckily, I didn't have to pay them anything or anything. They liked the content and shared it, you know, on their own volition. You know, I didn't have to pay them or anything. But how do you think it got to, what's it at now? 22 million views. That's how. So when you're talking about these networks and making posts, it's not like they're just paying for people to make posts that independently and organically get really popular. You make a post and then you send it out to everyone else, you know, and you have a combined following of like 100 million people, you can rack up views pretty quickly. But I want to explain like what's, but why would they actually do this? Why would they actually pay for this? Is this actually helping, do you think? Is one post worth $4,000? Probably not. I mean, how convincing could it possibly be? And is engagement really the thing that you value the most? Because I could say something incredibly stupid and offensive and it would get a lot of engagement. It just wouldn't help your cause at all. So how do you determine whether it's actually helping your cause if all you're judging it by is the engagement? That'd be an easy way to, I don't know, get a bunch of money just by causing problems and strife. But I think the key here is when it comes to Eyal Yacoby and what he says about it, this tells you what the real value is and what they're really paying for by running this. Because as Eyal Yacoby, I think I'm pronouncing that right, but I also don't care. What he says, I think, is absolutely true. He basically said, well, I'll just read it. One of the conservative figures associated with the campaign was Eyal Yacoby, a recent college grad with a popular X account who began working with one of Parscale's firms about a year ago. He says, after testifying before a House committee about anti-Semitism on college campuses, Yacoby says neither Influenceable or any other firm has ever compensated him to promote views he did not already hold. It's not like an agency that represents you, he says. An official with Influenceable says Yacoby had participated in numerous campaigns on issues related to Israel. Eyal Yacoby has worked with Influenceable as a paid influencer, but never on behalf of the Israeli government. The executive says, insisting none of their influencers have been paid with foreign money, Yacoby declined to comment further. So when he says that he holds the views already, I think he's probably telling the truth. The question is, why would they pay him to post stuff that he would post already without their payment? And it's because it's not necessarily about getting people to support, to express support for Israel. It's about pushing a unified message, whatever that message happens to be. It's not enough that people are against the Iran MOU. They have to all be expressing the exact same outrage about the MOU. It's less about getting the message out as it is about consolidating the message, unifying or directing the messaging. So it's not so much they had to convince people who either don't care or anti-Israel, well, we'll pay you to be pro-Israel. It's paying pro-Israel people to coordinate their messaging across the board and do it in a secretive way where they're not actively communicating with each other. And so it gives the appearance of all these different people from all across this broad spectrum of influencers all happen to have exactly the same reading of the situation. That's how you manipulate the masses. That's how you, you know, shape public perception about an idea. You have the same idea expressed over and over again from a bunch of different people who seemingly don't have much in common. And we've explained this with other, you know, known Israeli subversive right-wing so-called influencers. In the Lobby documentary, we talked about how they were running Facebook groups where the Facebook group would be about cats or about coffee. And they would do this. And it was like a full-time job to run one of these super popular Facebook groups. And they were every day uploading content about coffee and cats, and they kept it going and they built a real community. And then every like 10 or 20 posts would just be a little post about like, oh, by the way, we stand with Israel. The point of that being that you're not convincing anybody with that single post. And the coffee or cat lover market is not a demographic that they're desperate to corner. What they want to do is put across the perception that normal people from all walks of life just, you know, occasionally express their support of Israel. And there's nothing weird about that. And there's nothing, you know, abnormal about that. This is just what happens. You know, everybody supports Israel. That's why the coffee people you're following, they're for Israel, and the cat people are for Israel. They're actually agents of the Israeli government being paid to create that perception in your mind. This is the way psychological operations actually operate. It is less about the individual post than it is about the wide swath of posts all using the same word, the same keyword, the same phrase, the same concept, a concept or a phrase or a keyword that has been A/B tested by the ADL, where they run workshops where they say, well, which sounds better? Should we say that this is bad because it's America losing and we don't want America humiliated? So, you know, we don't want to surrender. This makes Trump look weak. Like, how effective is that? And they A/B test it. Maybe they run some, you know, AI simulations, or maybe they, you know, like on YouTube, if you upload a YouTube video, you can put two different titles with two different thumbnails and it will post both of them. And whichever one does better, it'll make the permanent one. So they do that. They have workshops and, you know, infinite money and to hire people to run these things. It's the same thing you do when you're coming out with a new flavor of soda. You have a, you know, consumer sit there and test it and tell you what they think and give you feedback, or a movie. That's why movies suck now to a large degree, because you have test audiences. So they have test audiences. They test the effectiveness of certain arguments. What you'll recognize is none of this has anything to do with what's best for America or the truth. That never even enters into the conversation. It's about how do we persuade people? What's the best messaging? How do we convince people of this? It has absolutely nothing, and it actually has a, I guess you could say, a adversarial relationship with the truth, the metaphysical reality that we all exist in. So again, that's why it's worth it to them. That's why they pay so much. It's not about the individual post. They know that nobody's being convinced by Eyal Yacobi. But if Eyal Yacobi posts something and he's using the right keywords and he's phrasing it in the right way and he does it in a way that, you know, they find effective, then they have that post shared by a whole bunch of other people. And again, it gives it the impression of and the semblance of organic popularity, when really it's a giant scam. It's either one person with a bunch of bots, or it's a bunch of people who are paid to do it. It's astroturfed. It's like when they pump in crowd noise at a concert, or, you know, anything like that. It's creating a false reality in which Israel is popular and doing the right thing. The Parscale-led effort continues, but neither the Trump administration nor the Israelis appear happy about how it's going. You can just stop killing people. Feel free to stop killing people at any time, and then you don't need to spend another single dollar on convincing people you're not as bad as you actually are. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government had hired Parscale to improve the nation's standing among conservatives, only to watch support continue to erode on the American right and across the broader U.S. electorate. We are pissed at Brad Parscale, says the Israeli official familiar with the arrangement. Why would anybody work with Israelis? Oh my God, they're just awful. It's like, here, you have to improve our reputation, but also we're not going to stop betraying America, killing innocent people, annexing the West Bank. You know, they just poured like $30 billion into, here, $400 million just got sent from the Israeli government to the terrorist settlers in the West Bank. It's like, you have to improve our reputation, but we're going to keep just being the worst people in the world. We're going to continue to murder innocent people at a industrial scale. And if you can't make people love us, then you're a bastard. Then we hate you. Then you, it's your fault. It's Brad Parscale's fault that everyone hates Israel. And it's just like, you signed a contract with these people? Why? Why did you do that? Who convinced you? What psychological operation were you subjected to that made you think you should sign a contract with these people? My God. He was supposed to make things better. We've paid him lots of money, and what did he do with it? Things have only gotten worse. Oh, they just keep getting worse. It's like you are actively strangling a child right now. You're saying this, but as I look at you, you're strangling a child to death right now. It's like that Brad Parscale. It's his fault everybody hates us. Give me the next one. Next Palestinian child I want to strangle to death. My anxiety. I'm verklempt. I need to kill children. My God. Only 32% of Americans now view the Israeli government favorably, the lowest level in decades. What a coincidence. What a coincidence that happened to happen 2 years after you started a genocide. What are the odds? Parscale insists his initiative has been working. The purpose of this campaign was to prevent the enemies of Israel and the West from driving a wedge between Israel and the Americans who have traditionally supported it, particularly on the political right, as they've already succeeded in doing among significant portions of the left. Like, do you see that these people are operating in an unreality? They're not on Earth. I don't know where the hell they think they are. But did you get the implication there? Did you understand the underlying sentiment behind what I just read? I'll say it again. The purpose of this campaign was to prevent the enemies of Israel and the West from driving a wedge between Israel and the Americans, as they have succeeded in doing among significant portions of the left. You're telling me, Brad Parscale, that you think the reason people don't like Israel is because the left has driven a wedge? Because it's a propaganda campaign? A successful Muslim psyop to convince people that Israel is bad? Why do you think you're losing? It's like, you want to know why you're losing? It's right here. This is it. This is why you're losing. This is why the PR isn't working. Because you live in a fantasy world, in an imagined simulacrum in which the American people are just mindless NPCs that just so happened to be appealed to first by the Muslims, so that's who they're going with. And if you could just appeal to them more, then they'll just go with you. And it's not like we have thoughts. It's not like we're responding to a situation in reality that we're observing with our own eyes and that we have principled moral objections to. No, no, no. It's enemies of the West have driven a wedge because they hate Israel and they want us to hate Israel too because they understand that Israel is so important to our survival. Like, what is going on in their minds? What is happening in Brad Parscale's mind? You have to wonder. Because it's statements like that that explain that you will never succeed in making Israel popular because you do not have the humility to recognize what's made it hated in the first place. How are you ever going to get anybody to like Israel when your only solution is to claim that they don't like Israel because they were tricked by Muslims and that if they were just tricked by Jews first, it would all be better? Like, what is the argument here exactly? We're back on the other side to actually read in full the amendments that are attempting to merge the Israeli and American government. In the meantime, I hope you can support us. We have all new summer apparel. And I got to tell you, folks, I might be stealing another hat today. There are a couple very cool hats, very cool t-shirts. There's the, you know, Don't Tread on Me parody. That's Don't Spy on Me. And it's got that. I've got the t-shirt right down there. I could go grab it, but I'd have to get down. There's a performance fishing shirt as well with a 13-star Betsy Ross flag. The 1776 heavyweight shorts are now available. We've got brand new patriotic hats and limited edition summer tees that you will love. Get them now. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison. There it is. It's the red hat with the eagle. All right. I'm stealing that hat too. I'm getting another hat from my collection. That is the second coolest hat I've ever seen. It might even be cooler than the first.
Introducing AquaPure, the ultimate water filter showerhead. Ladies and gentlemen, on your screen are the major third-party scientific tests. This is the very best, top-of-the-line water filtration system for your showerhead. It just takes seconds to be screwed on to any system, no plumbers. You owe it to yourself, your husband, your wife, your children to cut out the gender-bending chemicals that are in all the major tap water supplies. Most well water is contaminated as well. You can't just filter the water you drink.
One of the biggest places you can pull the studies up that we absorb poisons is through our skin and through our lungs. The amount of chlorine in major water supplies is insane. You know, if you put fish in tap water, even if you aerate it, even if you feed them, they die within hours. That's because it's toxic. That's because it's poison. Chlorine alone kills bacteria. Great, you don't get dysentery, but it destroys your gut flora, and it's directly linked to cancer. Then you've got the fluoride, you've got the lead, you've got the arsenic. This system reduces it all 95 to 95%. Now, we've got gravity-fed filters that cut it all out, but those are drip, drip, drip. This system is the very best on the market and reduces it from 95 to 99%, depending on the hundreds of chemicals that are out there in the studies that have been done. And that is the top of the line because it's forcing it through fast. It's got really good pressure, and you are reducing it down 95 to 99%. That is the best you are going to get if you live in one of these cities with the deadly tap water. And so many areas like Los Angeles are toilet to tap. They recycle the birth control and the Adderall and all the thousands of pharmaceuticals and the feces and the tampons and the microplastics all go back in, go through all these complex systems. They fill with all this chlorine, and then they ship it back out down your water pipes. And not to mention what's in the pipes and all the buildup. And then when sewage runs off, it gets into the water supply. You are insane if you're drinking tap water. And you can look up the studies for yourself. Almost all well water and aquifers in the United States are heavily contaminated with thousands of different chemicals like lead and mercury and arsenic and fluoride and other forever chemicals. So again, I can tell you forever in my home, we have these systems, and it does hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of showers before it's got to be replaced. The head's not replaced. We have the replacement filters for $30. For this quality, nobody can beat it, and it funds our operation against the globalist. This is very, very competitive at the normal retail. Listen to this. Normal retail is $139, but for everybody, it's $97.99, that's 30% off. And for VIP, $69.99. That is a steal at that deal. So anybody buying anything at thealexjonesstore.com, whether it's t-shirts, high-quality supplements, water filters, you name it, should be a VIP. It's $30 a month. Instantly get $40 to spend, special deals, special offers, and special sales on top of sales on everything. Cancel any time, so it's not even a commitment. You just get the better deals. We get to remind you of those, and we've got a lot of really satisfied customers. Over 90-plus percent reorder rate on our supplements, and it's starting to happen with our water filters as well because we've got the best deals, and it funds our information warfare operation. This is the best. You owe it to yourself. Secure yours now while supplies last at thealexjonesstore.com, and I want to thank you for supporting the transmission while at the same time making yourself healthier, wealthier, and wise. God bless you all. Now take action now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. I'm going to talk about the war in Iran, the war in America here, the 7th and 8th front of Israel's war for global domination. By the way, do you know that my joke is becoming real? My joke about Israeli space lasers is actually becoming, I'm sorry, they're not Jewish space lasers. That's an insane QAnon conspiracy theory. You're an anti-Semite. What they are is space-based Israeli direct energy weapons, okay? Okay, you could say Jewish space lasers now. Okay, they admit it. The Jews have space lasers now. Israel wants to build space attack lasers now. As if its wars on Earth were not enough, Israel now plans to develop offensive laser weapons for use in space. No country has the ability to mount attacks in space. We must be leading the country in the world in this capability, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz told reporters at a press briefing last week. If we achieve this, it will ensure the advantage of deterrence, the ability to attack, destroy, and all other matters versus our enemies with large resources. Yep, that's how it always works. For sure. As soon as one person deploys a novel warfare technology, they win. Nobody else does anything. It's certainly not going to create a weapons race for space-based weapons. Nope, they'll win. Again, I swear, Israelis really do have this mindset. They're like, if we just kill the right person, we'll be safe forever. If we just get our hands on a nuclear weapon, we'll be safe forever. If we just build space lasers, we'll be safe forever. And it's like, how about you just stop fighting everybody all the time? That might bring safety. Have you ever thought about peace rather than war as being a method for safety? No, the answer is no. They've never thought about that. Trump retreat over Hormuz tolls suggests he's struggling to end the Iran war. Does it? Does that suggest he's struggling? To me, it's the fact that he's declared victory 47 times already. Shows he's struggling to end the war. Trump's latest Iran war demand lasted all of 24 hours and suggests a president searching for unorthodox ways out of a difficult position. On Monday morning, in a social media post announcing the resumption of an American naval blockade on Iranian shipping, he said that all vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz, including those of U.S. allies, must pay a 20% fee to reimburse the U.S. for any and all costs necessary to do the job of public providing safety and security for this very volatile section of the world. It's a very volatile section of the world since we started that war, huh? The following day, he abandoned the proposal completely, offering instead that he would strike trade and investment deals with America's Gulf allies, implying the U.S. would offer them safe passage to the Strait in return. The abrupt about-face was the latest in the latest twist in a conflict that has now lasted more than 4 months, and despite a months-old memorandum of understanding that secured a temporary ceasefire and set up a framework for negotiations, shows no sign of ending. Because of Israel. Because Israel refuses to abide by... Like, this is one of the things. If you're informed, it's obvious to see, but like, if you were actually relying on these papers for your information, they just don't mention the most important parts. They just leave it out. I swear, this is one of the main reasons why everybody is so insane all the time. Like, they leave out the most pertinent part of the story. The important part of the story is the memorandum of understanding didn't work. We are now scrambling to desperately find some, as they put it, unorthodox way to end the conflict, because the orthodox way to end the conflict is that Israel has to stop bombing civilians in Beirut, and they won't do that. So now we have to try to come up with new ways of ending this war that Israel got us in the first place. They don't mention that. It must be confusing to be like, wait, we signed a memorandum of understanding, but what made it fall apart? They don't say it just fell apart. It just, yeah, things fall apart. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Things fall apart. That happens, you know. Nobody's fault. Is it lying? I would consider it lying, a form of lying. It's lying by omission. But you can't say they're telling an untruth when they just leave stuff out. This is one of the main tactics of the media. They'll tell you everything you need to know except the pertinent part that actually defines the whole story. So you're left feeling informed, but still, like, you can't quite connect the dots in your head. You're like, wait, but I think I'm missing something. Yeah, you're missing the main thing, that this is all for the sake of Israel. They won't mention that, though. Trump does not rule out ground invasion in Iran and suggests the U.S. will take Karg Island. President Trump on Tuesday sat for an interview with Fox News where he suggested that a ground invasion may be imminent in Iran and the U.S. may take over Iran's critical oil export hub of Karg Island. Let's go ahead and go to clip number one here. This is Gateway pundit Donald Trump in an interview yesterday. Let's watch.
So your objectives are to ensure that Iran never has a nuclear weapon, to keep the strait open, and to degrade the Iranian military. Can those objectives be completed in an air campaign alone, or does this require a ground component?
Well, I think they're completed now, honestly. If we left right now, it would take them 20 years to rebuild what they have. The only way you can negotiate with these people is through strength. And the only strength is military strength. And that's what we've done. And I mean, literally 2 days ago, we had a deal and then they broke it at the last moment. They broke it.
Will these strikes continue?
They'll continue until I say it's enough. I mean, they'll continue. They've been They're, you know, the word the military likes to use is degrade. They've been degraded to a very low level. And they have fight. You know, it's like a great boxer. You have, you think you have him beat, and then all of a sudden he comes back and he gives you a shot. They have some fight left, but they don't have much. And their weapon degrading has been incredible at a level. Nobody thought it was possible to do it this quickly.
You posted today on True Social comments that you made back in 1988 about Karg Island. And at the time you said, one bullet shot at one of our men or ships, and I'd do a number on Karg Island, I'd go in and take it.
Yeah.
Do you still intend to take Karg Island?
So I can't say that to you, because if I did, it would be foolish, right? But it would be nice to make a little headlines, but it would be foolish. But I'll tell you about Karg Island. So we've already...
Are you ruling out a ground campaign in a limited capacity?
I don't want to say that either, but I would say no if I thought it was appropriate. I'd say sometimes you need a ground campaign, but we have other people that will do the ground campaign for us. But we already hit Karg Island, as you know, twice. Even three times. I said, hit everything but the oil. Just leave that little area from 25 yards out. Leave that little area. Don't touch the oil. Because I don't want that in terms of the world economy. It's a chunk of the world economy. So we haven't hit that. At some point we could. But I think it's unlikely. As far as taking it is concerned, if we degrade them far enough and deep enough back, I would do that.
You know, we could leave today, and it would take them 20 years to rebuild. We have no reason of being there. But maybe I'll put 100,000 troops on a tiny island where all of their artillery can hit. Maybe I'll do that instead. We could end it right now. We could go home today, and we'd be fine. And it would take them 20 years, and there'd be no threat. But I think I'd rather do a ground invasion, actually. But if you listen, I mean, you can hear little hints. And yeah, maybe I'm just imagining things, but yesterday he told the Iraqi prime minister that he would be a great leader in the Middle East beyond Iraq. And today he's saying, oh, we have boots on the ground. We have other people to do boots on the ground for us. Okay, so it sounds to me like they're negotiating with Iraq. They're probably negotiating with the Kurds. They're talking to al-Jolani. We know he wants Syria to go into Lebanon. As I said yesterday, maybe they're deciding, can we afford that? Can we afford to have Israel continue to take a beating in Lebanon if we need al-Jolani's terrorist horde to go after Iran? So it does sound like we're trying to form up some sort of military force for a mass invasion using Syrians and Kurdish people and Iraqis. So we could just go home. We could just go home from the Middle East. There always is that option. U.S. and Iran exchange heavy strikes for fifth day as Trump warns he'll take out power plants next. The Pentagon opened Wednesday morning by announcing yet another round of strikes on Iran in what looks like a sustained action, also increasingly expanded to include civil and energy infrastructure of the Islamic Republic. At 6 a.m. Eastern today, U.S. Central Command forces began launching a wave of strikes against Iran, CENTCOM announced. The strikes are designed to further degrade military capabilities Iranian forces have used to attack commercial shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. military further indicated it launched a seven-hour wave of strikes overnight. The evening prior, the U.S. reimposed naval blockade on Iranian ports alongside launching its fourth consecutive night of strikes on the country. A U.S. strike also hit wheat storage silo in Iran's Hawiyez province. They hit a grain storage silo in southwest Iran early on Wednesday, state media reported. So we have now resorted to the bombing their food supplies part of the terrorist operation. Meanwhile, the Iran war destroyed the strategic logic of the Abraham Accords. According to responsible statecraft, the agreements can't bring peace because they sidestep the root cause of instability in the Middle East. Abraham Accords were sought to succeed where decades of negotiations had failed. By separating Arab normalization with Israel from the Palestinian issue, the effort bypassed the core concept of the 2002 Arab Peace Initiative, which explicitly tied normalization to the creation of a Palestinian state on its 1967 borders. The Accords made no attempt to discuss or adjust this principle. Instead, they discarded it outright. The American approach was based on an exchange of interests. The UAE and Bahrain acquired the security assurances they'd long sought to protect them from Iran, along with prospects for military and technological cooperation with Israel. Morocco secured America's recognition of its sovereignty over Western Sahara, fulfilling Rabat's longstanding demand. Sudan, for its part, was primarily concerned with getting off Washington's state sponsor of terror list and ending the economic and financial isolation that has long burdened the country. Each party had its demands, and Washington was ready to pay the political price of fulfilling them. So there's a couple things about this article. For one, you know, showing that the incoherence in the foreign policy when it comes to the Middle East, that we worked so hard and for so long and gave up so much for the Abraham Accords, only to have the entire underlying premise destroyed when we went and attacked Iran. And so we're trying to have our cake and eat it too. That doesn't work out in the long run. But the other thing is, again, another acknowledgement of all of the sacrifices America is willing to make for Israel. The Abraham Accords are about normalization with Israel. It's for Israel's benefit that America did all of this stuff. Just some of the things they mentioned here, but on top of that, all of the, you know, wealth and, you know, trade deals that we helped to assess, all for the sake of Israel. This does not benefit America. It disadvantages America. America had certain things that we gave up so that Israel could normalize with its neighbors, because we're their bitch, apparently, and everything we do is entirely and 100% in service of Israel. It's like cartoonish at this point. But yes, the entirety of Trump's foreign policy agenda for his first and second administration, his first administration was entirely on the Abraham Accords, meaning that America gave up all sorts of things that we were holding on to for the sake of Israel so they could normalize relations with their neighbors for their benefit. We did all of that only to blow it up when we again did something for Israel, went to war with Iran, which has, you know, destroyed all the other stuff we gave them. It's just, we are the giving tree. We are the giving tree. Israel is the little boy. Only at the end of the book, he burns us to the ground and says it's our fault that he was disadvantaged his whole life. Incredible. And it really just goes on and on. But yeah, like we there was a lot of stuff that America did to convince other countries to stop being enemies with Israel. None of it benefited us. It's all for Israel, our greatest allies. In the same way that Egypt is our number two recipient of foreign aid just after Israel, because we pay Egypt not to attack Israel. Like all of our foreign aid, all of our diplomatic gravitas, all of our warfare, all of our political, gains that we've achieved in the last 10 years has all just been handed to Israel. Like a baby being handed to Moloch to be consumed in the fire of their murderous greed. So I'm just here to tell you about it. Meanwhile, Iran sent message to J.D. Vance warning that Kushner and Witkoff were abusing their inside access to negotiations. During U.S.-Iran talks in Lake Lucerne, Switzerland in late June, Iranian negotiators sent a private message to J.D. Vance through an intermediary. The Iranians warned Vance that the continued presence of Donald Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff and son-in-law Jared Kushner would undermine the chance of turning the June 17 framework into an enduring deal, a senior Iranian official told DropSite News. An Iranian official spoke to DropSite on the condition of anonymity. In the message, according to the officials, Iran conveyed to Vance that the pair were more interested in exploiting their insider knowledge of negotiations to profit in financial markets than they were in reaching a deal. Iranian negotiators also expressed concern about repeated leaks from Kushner to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And a U.S. official told Axios that since the negotiations began, Witkoff and Kushner talk almost every day to Netanyahu and the head of Mossad. They're Israelis. Do you understand? They're Israelis. They are aligned with the Israeli faction. They are top members of the Jewish mafia, the global Zionist criminal cabal. Like, they aren't American. They aren't working for America. They don't even have official positions in the American government. They're just Israeli agents, unofficially tapped by Trump, but working directly for Benjamin Netanyahu. And when you understand that this has been a persistent theme for Trump's second administration, that you had Mike Waltz coordinating with and collaborating with Benjamin Netanyahu to give him an advantage prior to his visiting the U.S. and negotiating with Donald Trump, that's called treason. I mean, he's a traitor. He should be executed for that. Instead, he was fired and demoted to U.N. ambassador for Donald Trump. But he was caught communicating with Benjamin Netanyahu in secret just before Netanyahu came to America to negotiate with Trump, Waltz was feeding him information and helping him get the best leg up. He is loyal to Netanyahu. He's loyal to his people. He's loyal to his nation, Israel and the Jewish diaspora. He's not loyal to America. It's why he leaked the signal chat to the far left Zionist editor of the Atlantic. Atlantic editor, super far left liberal, Mike Waltz, in the Trump administration, inside the cabinet. In reality, both are Israeli agents. Both are trying to benefit Israel. Both are collaborating on this in coordination with the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, who's also receiving and directing Kushner and Witkoff. It's a coup. It's a takeover. It's treason. And they're making billions of dollars off this information as well. And I, you know, look forward to the impeachment trial. Meanwhile, Israel approves over $400 million to fund 34 settlements in occupied West Bank. Again, an abject and direct and explicit violation of Trump's demands. The Israeli government announced on Tuesday it had approved a budget of approximately 1.3 billion shekels, that's $434 million, to fund the establishment of 34 new settlements in occupied West Bank. According to Israel news outlet Yonet, the decision was made by Security Cabinet in June, but kept under wraps over concerns about the U.S. response. Don't you love that? They're like, ooh, the U.S. is really not going to like us doing this. So we're doing it, but we won't tell them. But we'll keep it under wraps. We'll keep it secret for like a month or so. But in reality, what do they think is going to happen? What could they possibly do that could more outrage the American people? They don't care. They don't care. They should, because we should stand up for ourselves. Because when Donald Trump makes an explicit demand about the West Bank settlements, and that is clearly violated on purpose by the Israelis, there should be some recompense for that. There should be some punishment from Trump for that. But he's incapable, apparently, of doing that. So it's almost comical to me that they're like, oh, the Americans might not like this. It's never stopped you before. The latest approval brings the number of settlements authorized under Netanyahu's current government to 104 since it took office in late 2022. The government also approved the reestablishment of the settlement Sa'nur in the northern West Bank, months after Israeli settlers returned to the site, which had been evacuated in 2005 during Israelis' disengagement from the Gaza Strip. So, yeah, they are ethnically cleansing the Gaza Strip, the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The West Bank, of course, being the last population of Christians that have been there since the time of Jesus. But they're all being murdered and driven out and ethnically cleansed by our greatest ally, Israel, because they're evil anti-Christian scum who despise humanity. I think they despise humanity. And we can get back to that in just a second. In fact, we'll finish off with that and then we'll get to the merger bills in the next hour. Pressure builds over Israel's treatment of Palestinian prisoners. This story from Wall Street Journal explains that. We can get into it. Like, do we really need to? Like, how many more reports do we need? I mean, it's the same thing over and over. It's like getting reports about Anthony Fauci hiding the source of COVID. It's like, how many do we need an investigation into this? We have it on video. We have their own admissions. It's been tried in court. They were found guilty. Like, what are we doing here? How many more times do we need to have it reinforced that the Israelis are psychotic murderers and rapists? I mean, it's just should be assumed by now. The Palestinians were enough. The Jason Jones Show. This is from the Jason Jones Show.substack.com. Condemning Israel's genocide in Gaza and advocating for its victims is no longer a lonely or risky business in American public life. It sounds almost silly for me to say that now, but honestly, the thought only occurred to me this week, ironically, after 2.5 years of nonstop work with the vulnerable Palestinians caught in the crosshair of Israel's military campaigns. I think my team at Vulnerable People Project and I may become a little slower on the uptake than the general public. The new AP NORC poll found just one-third of American adults, roughly half of the Democrats and one in five Republicans under 45, believe Israel has committed genocide against the Palestinians. Similarly, Gallup has found Americans sympathize more with Palestinians than Israel, 41% to 36%. Even among Republicans, sympathy for Israel has fallen 10 points since 2024 to its lowest levels in more than two decades. And we know, of course, that that is Brad Parscale's fault. That's why that happened. In other words, people now say publicly what could end careers and friendships only a short time ago. So it may seem hard to believe, but after the Hamas terrorist attacks of October 7, 2023, when Israel began its military campaign in Gaza, I balked. In this column, I'm unloading what went through my head in that moment and where my thoughts have led me since. He says, I immediately considered what the Vulnerable People Project could do for Palestinian victims, but that's not all I considered. I also allowed myself to weigh what standing in solidarity with the victims might do to VPP, and I understood in an instant that speaking out could put everything I built at risk. Donors would leave us, friends and allies who regarded nearly any criticism of Israel as a betrayal would cease to be friends and allies, might even become enemies. I'd spent decades in the pro-life movement where political lines were clear and many people I respected believed unconditional support for Israel belonged on the same side of those lines as advocacy for the unborn. The carnage that began in Gaza immediately after October 7th would muddy all of that. I knew that for certain. But I knew something more certainly, with a knowledge that lived deep in the deep part of my gut rather in my head. Refusing to speak out against Israel's violence would betray everything I had ever claimed to stand for. And this is just an extremely powerful article about sort of the personal experience of what it's like trying to stand up for what you know is right, to promote something that, you know, people are to be believed, you know, what they say about what they believe, then you should be celebrated and encouraged and upheld for the obvious anti-genocide stance and the realization that that's not the way it is. And actually, you got to weigh pros and cons of doing the right thing when you live in an extremely wicked and fallen and evil empire. Very powerful stuff. Please follow and help the Vulnerable People Project, the JasonJonesShow.substack.com, the JasonJonesShow.substack.com. Cannot support him enough since he's actually there on the front line helping to get food and supplies and needed care to the Palestinians. Like I said, when we get back on the other side, we'll talk about the Israel merger bills that are being voted on today. But you've got to go to thealexjonesstore.com to get your summer apparel, brand new patriotic hats, limited edition summer tees. Let me just grab it. I'm going to grab it. Here's the shirt. Here's the shirt right here, folks. Don't spy on me, the new version of the Gadsden flag, letting everybody know where we stand on the topic of flock cameras. We think they should be thrown into a wood chipper. Don't spy on me. Just one of the incredible new shirts at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. By the way, we still have the silver coins, the America 250 celebratory coin with the Crusader cross on the obverse. These are selling out fast. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. It's a collectible, keeps us on the air, looks great on a shelf.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, has been very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
At last, it's here. Bring it into the docking bay. Stack them all in my chambers at once. I now have all the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter shower heads from the Alex Jones store.
There's something about this water I feel kind of funny. Hey, do you want to hang out tonight?
These stormtroopers are not warriors. They are vessels. We keep them full of chemicals to keep them under control. Like the dark side itself, it dulls the mind. It fractures the will.
Drink your water, troopers. I am sending you to the desert planet of Tatooine. We must crush the rebel force.
Dude, I think I'm gay. Me too. Let's go back to the shit and cuddle. I thought you'd never ask.
Turn around now and get back out there. These are your orders.
They're turning the frogs gay. Don't let them turn you next. You have to admit that Alex Jones is funny.
These will sell well on the black market.
I have the water filters.
Where are my water filters? Bring them to me, or feel the full wrath of the Sith.
I think you have something that belongs to me.
The epic first installment by Wars of the Info. Follow him on X at Wars of the Info. Very epic stuff. Look, folks, I was thinking about it the other day, and if you are not filtering your shower filter, like your shower water, what are you doing? What are you doing? You filter the water you drink. It's like, I think about people who are like so, you know, concerned about this stuff. It's like they avoid microplastics. You know, they get all cotton clothing. They don't want to wear polyester. They filter their water. They're supplementing. They're doing all this stuff. And then you're spending 10 minutes a day, at least, in a sauna of chemical poison. Like, you're absorbing it through your skin. It's getting in your mouth. It's getting, like, why would you? You're huffing it. You're breathing it in. The steam is nothing but atrazine and fluoride. And it's like, why let all of the other stuff you do be completely undone because you don't have a filter on your shower? It's as obvious to me as filtering the water that you drink, but people don't think about it. So it's one of those ironies I was thinking about today. People out there, probably they got the Alexa Pure Breeze. They're filtering their air. They're filtering the water they drink. They're assiduously avoiding GMOs and growth hormones and plastics and all this sort of stuff. And then they're just bathing in chemical soup every single day for multiple minutes at a time. And it's like, yeah, you got it. You know, it's the same thing I think about pregnant women getting vaccines for their kids. It's like, you just spend 9 months just of like hyper paranoid about everything you put in your body because you're carrying a kid. Everything that you eat has to be, you know, certain thing. You spend 9 months avoiding sushi and lunch meat and everything else. And then the instant your baby's born, you inject it with like 3 milligrams of aluminum. It's just like, what? If you're going to be this concerned, like, how does that concern not carry on to the vaccines? Or if you're concerned about your health and keeping poisons out, how does that not extend to the air that you're breathing in the shower, the steam and the chemicals that you're getting? You got to get a water filter. You got to get a shower filter, and you can get both at the highest quality and best prices at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. When we get back on the other side, we're going to read some bills, folks. Stay tuned. Nothing more exciting than reading a couple bills, but we will. We will.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water. You're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95%+ lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of thealexjonesstore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at thealexjonesstore.com.
Welcome back, folks. It's interesting seeing the process take place when a conspiracy is uncovered and then the way that people react to it. Because it happens on the left and the right in very similar ways. Really only when Israel's involved, but the right wing tends to take on the character of the left when Israel gets involved. That's why it's absurd they call us the woke right when they're the ones who want censorship and, you know, think that you deserve certain things because of the way you were born. Regardless, what is the classic conspiracy cycle? It's, that's not happening. Okay, it is happening, but not like you said it is. Okay, it is happening like you said it is, but you're actually the one who's wrong for complaining about it. Like, we know this cycle. We've seen it enough, and we're seeing it again with this Israeli bill. Now, I don't know if you remember, but like, this has been a very naturally occurring outrage, right? This wasn't some big production that everybody became aware of this. It's like slowly trickled up where like somebody was like, hey, what is this 224 thing? This looks kind of shady. And people are like, yeah, are you merging with our government? And then eventually you get to Benjamin Netanyahu writing a letter saying, thank you for adopting my proposal. And he's on TV being like, yeah, we're moving from, dependency to partnership, and he's pushing it and celebrating it. And the reaction now, I guess the strategy that people are in favor of this are running with is like, this isn't actually a thing. It's not, it doesn't really matter. Stop complaining about it. Let it pass. It has to pass, but actually it's not, it doesn't really matter and nothing's actually happening. You're crazy, paranoid, panicking for thinking that, you know, this bill is bad at all or does anything. It's actually totally normal, and it's what we already do with Israel. It's like, that doesn't make, then why are you passing the bill? And then why are you worried about the bill not passing? Why are you writing 4 pages of argumentation criticizing people against this bill if it doesn't actually matter and doesn't do anything? So I guess that's the strategy they're going with now, is like, there's no merger. It's not happening. You're paranoid if you talk about it, which I always find very funny too, because if there's one word that defines the Israeli character, it's panic. It's absolutely everything has to be done right now or we're all going to die. And you have to agree with us 100% of the time and do everything that we say, or else you are an anti-Semite that wants us all to die. You're a Muslim AOC, Hitlerite, and you're also a communist. And it's just like, oh, but we're the panickins. It's like, stop panicking about you know, this bill. Stop panicking about Section 219. You're panicking about Section 219, and if it doesn't pass, then Israel will be taken over by Muslims and we'll be next, and your daughter will be raped by Muslims. Stop panicking. All right, let's all calm down. I can't even keep up with how many amendments and bills are all pointed in the same direction, because this is clearly a gigantic thing that's happening. That people are trying to sort of brush this off as like, this is just like agreements we have with the UK. No, it's not anything like that. Also, the UK is not Israel. And Israel has a long and storied history of stealing our intellectual property and selling it to our geopolitical enemies. So that might be a point of consideration in all of this. And it's even some people I generally like, but they get this attitude. That's infuriating. Matt Forney's one of them. I like Matt Forney. I interact with him very positively, and I agree with, you know, what he says about immigration stuff. Just when Israel comes up, he goes off the rails. He says, all of you are having hysterical reactions to the United States-Israel Technology Cooperation Initiative because you're getting your information from libtard rags and Muslim slop posters. No. I got my information from Benjamin Netanyahu. and Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich. What are you talking about? Like this, but this is the thing, right? Like this is how you can see, whether it's a paid operation or just a, you know, I don't know, psychological manipulation, but it almost always starts like this, right? It's always, you just believe this because somebody told you that. Everybody hates Israel because the left convinced them to, because Muslims convinced them to. God, you know, God forbid you have your own conscience and can think for yourself and see things with your own eyes and dislike those things. You must have had that idea implanted in you by a Muslim radical. That's why you don't like seeing the endless massacres of the Israelis against innocent people. It's because you've been brainwashed, and I'm here to re-brainwash you the right way. No, I'm able to think for myself, and this stuff is wrong and bad and treasonous and stupid. And most of all, it benefits America not even a little bit, not even possible to benefit America. It's literally us just giving everything away and getting absolutely nothing in return, which is the status quo when it comes to our relationship with Israel. But it always starts like this, right? Don't address the complaints. Discredit them by claiming that they must have come from some ulterior motive that's bad. No, it's a good motive. It's patriotism, and it's a strong dislike of Israel. There's so many bills. So many Israeli bills that can get confusing. Here's a breakdown from Gen X Girl at Gen X Girl 1994 on X. H.R. 8800, that's the NDA. A, the same bill is under S-4784 in the Senate, right? So H.R. 880 is its designation in the Congress. This is the same bill in the Senate. Senate 4615, Section 622, H.R. 7540, S-3855, H.R. 1229, S-554, House Resolution 1339. What you want to vote for is the Massey Amendment, which is H.R. 8595. And, of course, the number to call your House rep is 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. And you can call and tell them that if this passes, you will never vote Republican again, because we're attempting to stop this from passing. People are very stupid. I have trouble. Like, what happens is, like, I get so many stupid responses to tweets, I just, like, mute the notifications and just, like, start ignoring it, because I don't have time. I have got no time to respond to all these idiots, but it's fine. But it's just, like, is it not clear what I'm saying? This bill, if it's passed, remember, it creates offices. It creates positions. Once you create a position where you're putting somebody in a position of authority, where they have oversight and control and a budget, it's not easy to get rid of that position from then on. Once that starts, it begins to accrue power immediately. It begins to create an ecosystem that other people, other organizations, other aspects of the military will depend on, it will be permanent. There's no undoing this once it happens. Maybe, you know, if the Democrats get in, they could undo it next year or something like that. But if it gets into place and is allowed to, you know, create an office and build this bureaucracy for the next couple of years, like it's in forever. And once you, I mean, some of the collaborations they're discussing, some of the sharing of information and intelligence, it's not a knot that'll be easily untangled once it's pulled taut. And anybody telling you, don't worry about this, stop paying attention, just let this happen, like, they're wrong. And I'm not going to read into their motivations, but they're not pro-America, that's for damn sure. So these are the sections we'll read right now, because these are the sections of the NDAA 4784. Section 845 is the report on strategic partnership with Israel. Section 1215, U.S.-Israel subterranean operations cooperation. Section 1216, U.S.-Israeli cooperation on counter-unmanned systems, it's AI. Section 1217, U.S.-Israeli framework for upgraded technologies, unified research, and enhanced security futures act, that's a big one. Section 1531, Iron Dome short-range rocket defense systems. And then there's a illustration here. Expanded Mossad pipeline access to U.S. intelligence community resources. Potential effects on collection requirements, TCPED process, and intelligence gap closures, including 18 public IC elements. All this other stuff. Context. DIA raises intelligence counter, Israeli counterintelligence threat level to critical, highest level, June 2026 reporting. We'll get to that in just a second, but that is important context. Current Israeli limitations to collect against U.S. intelligence pre-NDAA provision. There's an access barrier, mass signature access, limited access to U.S. intelligence community, limited access to missile and space intelligence, advanced technological modeling from U.S. sources, restricted data pipeline, potential dual-use technology, potential for dual-use technology exploitation. All of these things will be granted to them with if this NDAA passes, with the DOD executive agent driving the pipeline integration, means heightened Israel intelligence collection and threat potential. And again, this is creating an office, essentially an Israeli agent office inside our government to direct our military and, again, get unrestricted access to our most valuable and sensitive information. This to a country who won't even do a favor for us when politely asked, right? Right now, Donald Trump has multiple times and publicly made the request that Israel exit from Lebanon, or at least withdraw to the Litani River. Do something that helps us in some way mitigate the enormous damage already done by the Israel-Iran conflict, but they won't do it. They refuse. So I give nothing else. Even if this is just a symbolic whatever, it's just, why would we marry ourselves to an even greater degree to a set of allies who do not seem willing to do anything for us? Anything. Why would we share anything with these people? Why would we give them any more access to anything? There's no argument for it. They don't benefit us. They don't act like allies to us. From Axios, they don't want you there. Trump tells Netanyahu to leave Syria and Lebanon. The U.S. president has reportedly pressed the Israeli PM to withdraw forces from both countries amid a widening rift. U.S. President Donald Trump pressed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to withdraw Israeli troops from Syria and begin redeploying forces from southern Lebanon, Axios has reported, citing U.S. and Israeli officials. The reported appeal is the latest sign of a widening rift between the two leaders, with Trump pressing Israel to scale back its military deployments while Netanyahu's government continues to insist on maintaining them indefinitely. So it's not like we have to speculate about the priorities of America and Israel and what the military merger would entail. We have examples right now of a very simple thing that Israel could do that would benefit American national security enormously. They won't do it. They don't care. So why would we be allies with them, let alone merge our military with them? This is ridiculous. And that's on top of the West Bank settlements, increased by hundreds, despite the fact that Trump explicitly said that they shouldn't do that. They're not our friends. They're not our friends. I don't know what else to tell you. And maybe I'm wondering if I should, I guess just to set the stage, we'll set the stage with this, because again, without even getting into the details, which we'll get into, and they're just as bad as you would expect, but without even getting into the details, just on a broad array basis, Israel, as of June of this year, that's 2 weeks ago, the Pentagon announced that they were raising the threat level of Israeli espionage to the highest level, to a critical threat. We're talking about giving direct intelligence access to the country that the Pentagon says spies on America more than any other country in a more dangerous way than any other country. The Defense Department increased the counterintelligence threat assessment to the highest level, and Israel is believed to have eavesdropped on American negotiations with Iran. So let's just lay the groundwork here. Israel is not our friend. They do not help us with national security. They do not change their desires, even when a very simple and easy alteration would be massively beneficial for Americans. They don't do it. They don't care. Again, how much do we have to go through this? They're spying on us. They planted stingray devices outside Trump's White House the first time around. They were caught planting tracking devices on his ambulance, likely ahead of an assassination attempt by them. They're caught over and over and over again. Mike Waltz communicating with Benjamin Netanyahu, the signal chat leak. We had Jonathan Pollard selling our information. There are multiple examples of Israel stealing American technology and selling it to the communist Chinese or selling it to communist Russia. And then the people that do that get a hero's welcome. Jonathan Pollard was greeted on the tarmac by Benjamin Netanyahu himself. These people are not our friends. They're our enemies. Just because there's a lot of them in our government doesn't mean that they're our friends. They just exploit us in the same way that you are not friends with, you know, the mafia just because you have mafia members exploiting your business, creating no-show jobs for themselves. They're just exploiting you. You don't have to let them. But it goes on. U.S. military technology sold by Israel to China upsets Asia power balance. This was in the late 90s. Israel's Lavi fighter bomber was designed to be one of the deadliest weapons in the air. However, it has now been revealed that after Israel discontinued the largely U.S.-funded project, it sold China the plans for the Lavi and the associated secret U.S. technology. This has enabled the Chinese to build their own version of this new generation of fighter aircraft. I can think of literally no less than like six examples of this exact thing happening. I can't think of another country that this has happened for. I mean, I know the Goldbergs were killed for selling, you know, secrets to the Soviets, but, you know, they were Jewish Israelis anyway. So I can't think of another country that we're allies or enemies with that has such a long and thorough history of betraying America and selling our valuable and secretive technology to our major and main political rivals and enemies. So then there's stuff like that. Well, there's obviously stuff like the Apollo Gold Pagers and all the other nefarious ways that Israel likes to kill its perceived enemies. But there's stuff like this we've reported on before, but is worth considering once again as we talk about merging American and Israeli military technologies. There's this: Russian S-300 and S-400 air defense systems are unable to detect Israeli F-35s flying over Syria. So Russia gave S-400 and S-300 air defense systems to Syria, but they programmed them to be incapable of intercepting Israeli F-35s. Gee, I wonder if they would do something like that. Like, imagine a situation where we have to go to war with Israel and Israel programs our weapons to where they will not fire if aimed at an Israeli machine. That's what they did in Syria with the S-400s with Russia. So these are the people that we're opening up our military technology pipeline to. Okay. It's like, what are you panicking about? Just because the convicted sex offender is the teacher doesn't mean you shouldn't send your kid to the preschool, right? Just because they have a very long history of committing this exact type of crime, that's not a reason to try to limit their access to this material in the future, is it? Of course it is. Oh, but you're panicking. But you're freaking out. you're hyperventilating and you're crazy. No, we don't want Israel getting more access to America. They betray us constantly. They don't like us. They're not good for us. They don't help us. They're not even good fighters. Okay, so when I'm panicking is the thing. It's dishonest. It's a dishonest framing to discredit the argument in the mind of the stupid. That only works on stupid people. I'll have you know. Just telling you, if you see these posts that are like, look at this idiot, but they don't actually say anything, you're being manipulated as a low IQ person who depends on the herd to dictate reality to you. You can see reality for yourself, and if you're an intelligent person, any attempt to sway you like that should instead sway you against the person using that technique. Do you know what I mean? Do you understand what I mean? When somebody doesn't actually argue against the thing, but does try to create a pressure, peer pressure atmosphere in which you're pressured to change your mind to something untrue. Like, you should dislike the person that's trying to convince you like that. You'd be like, wow, you're manipulative. I don't like that. I don't think you're like a cool person that I'm like, oh, I hope he thinks I'm cool too. No. No, you can think for yourself and you can actually read this stuff. So let's do that. Section 845, report on the feasibility and advisability of establishing a strategic partnership on defense industrial priorities between the United States and Israel. In general, not later than March 30th, 2027, the Secretary of Defense shall submit to the Committees on Armed Services of the Senate and the House of Representatives a report with a plan for the establishment of a partnership between the DOD and appropriate counterparts of the Government of Israel in order to enhance the market opportunities for United States-based and Israel-based defense technology companies, to increase interoperability through dual use and emerging technologies, to counter adversarial development of dual use defense technology, and in coordination with the appropriate counterpart offices of the Israeli Ministry of Defense, to enable coordination on defense industrial priorities and set tangible goals for industrial-based participation by both nations, to highlight partnering opportunities for programs in both nations, and to help navigate country-specific acquisition regulations for partners unfamiliar with the regulatory environment of others, of the other, to streamline emerging defense technology research and development, to create more effective pathways to market for defense technology startups that allow increased participation in industrial partners from each nation in the industrial bases of the other, to collaborate on the development of dual-use defense capabilities through coordination, and to leverage other private capital equity on venture funding opportunities to augment governmental funds for technology deployment or scaling. Five, to create programs that incentivize defense technology companies from both nations to address defense priorities outside the Middle East, and to explore innovative mentor-protege arrangements that partner companies from each nation to help navigate the acquisition regulatory environment of each nation. So what is that? What the hell does that mean? What the hell does that all mean? In a word, it means merger. It means joining. It means collaboration. It means fusing, synthesis. I mean, how many of these words did we see? Interoperability, dual use, like every word, coordination, partnering, effective pathways market for develop, increased participation, to collaborate, to leverage other private capital. Like, it's all just, okay, we're going to join. We're going to merge. We're going to collaborate. We're going to combine. I mean, how many other synonyms do you want for it? But don't say that we're merging. But don't say this is giving them access to any of our technology. We're just trying to, you know, create a situation in which there's essentially no difference between Israeli and American companies when it comes to defense supply, which is one of the only things that we do anymore is defense production. One of the only reasons we do defense production is because you have to be an American citizen to work in our sensitive defense industry. So it's one of the only places that actually makes American jobs is the weapons manufacturers, because to a large degree, you have to actually be American to work there. But not anymore, I guess. But I guess, you know, that level of sensitivity is no longer necessary. Now that we are just a colony of Israel. We'll be right back with more. We're going to read this whole thing, and the whole thing reads like that. Just, we're going to combine this, and we're going to combine this, and we're going to combine...
My fellow patriots,
The first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com and talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial, and this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down, and First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. You're watching us on the Alex Jones Network, AlexJonesLive.com. We've got all sorts of new products at TheAlexJonesStore.com to keep you healthy, fashionable, and, of course, helping to keep us on the air and in the fight. The showerhead filter is one of our newest products. And, I mean, if you don't have a water filter in your shower, I don't know why. I don't know why not. If you're filtering the water you drink, you should definitely be filtering the water that you shower in, and you should definitely be filtering the water that you drink. So Get all the filters you need at thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Ultra Methylene Blue Tincture is 40% off. We also have the introductory offer on the new Ultimate Turmeric Tincture, which is just absolutely incredible. Helps you take control of your health, support the broadcast, and experience the difference premium, fast-absorbing turmeric can make by going now to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison and getting your turmeric, Ultimate Turmeric Tincture, which is like a liquid version of that old product Bodies, which was one of my favorites back when we had it. Now we've got turmeric extract. It'll likely become one of my favorites as well. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison. And of course, the hats and the shirts are awesome as well. And as I'm reading through this table, I mean, we'll read through it. We will, because people keep telling us we have to. But I'm just letting you know right now, it's exactly what you think. It's a merger of Israeli. I mean, it's just the details of exactly what it sounds like. It is a merger of the Israeli intelligence and defense industries with America's. That's it. That's what's happening. Yeah, so I'll read it, but like, you know everything you're going to know at the end of this already. But I'm just proving that all the people telling us to stop panicking, that this is not doing what you say it's doing. No, it's absolutely doing what we say it's doing. And in fact, I want to go to clip number 15 first. This was a breath of fresh air. And this is one of the reasons that I, you know, don't feel bad about abandoning the Republican Party if and when this merger with Israel passes. It's because you listen to J.D. Vance and he's asked, like, why do people not like Israel in America? And he's like, they must be brainwashed. I guess we can figure it out. It's like, I don't trust you. How do you not know why people don't like Israel? You're lying. You're just lying. So let's go now to clip 15, where we get to see breath of fresh air. Somebody not lie and play stupid when asked. Let's watch.
One issue facing the Democratic caucus this week is a piece of legislation by Thomas Massie on Israel, cutting off funding $3 billion worth of aid to Israel.
Yes.
Where do you stand on that?
I'll be voting for it.
How come?
Well, because the Israelis are out of control. Lebanon, Gaza, there's no reason for us to continue to make these investments at this time.
She's got my vote. I like her. Yeah, she's, I don't know who this lady is. I assume she's a Democrat. Was that so hard? I loved that. You know, Thomas Massie it's a very contentious bill. There's a lot of, no, I'll vote for it. Oh, okay. Why? Because the Israelis are out of control. What are you talking about? Like, you don't need to elaborate on it. You don't need to justify your stance. It's self-evident to everybody that's not lying to you. Oh, why don't we want to support Israel? Because they're out of control. Gaza, Lebanon, there's no reason for us to support that. Next question, please. Like, that's it. That's all that's needed. That's why you feel crazy when this devolves into endless discussion and back and forth and page-long essays about, no, it's not that complicated, folks. We don't need to do this. There's no reason to do this. Israel's the bad guy. We support them. We should stop. That's it. It's all the discussion we ever need to have about this. But we'll keep going. But I love that. I love that. I don't know who that woman is, but like, why can we not have politicians be like that? Why can they not just tell the truth? Why can they not just say what's actually happening? Why don't you support Israel? Because they're out of control, man. They're crazy. Look at what they're doing. It's like the best answer I've ever heard from a politician. Why can't J.D. Vance say that? When J.D. Vance is asked, why don't people support Israel? He says, well, because they're out of control, dude. Gaza, Lebanon, they're murdering everybody. That's why. You don't think so? You think there's a different reason? Love to hear it. And this is my disappointment with the Republicans is immeasurable. They should be able to recognize the humanity of Palestinians just as well as anybody else. But they can't. Okay, so section 1217, this is the real one. This is the big one. This is the big deal. United States-Israel Framework for Upgraded Technologies, Unified Research, and Enhanced Security Futures Act of 2026. So even in the title, it talks about unified research. So again, just everybody telling you this doesn't merge anything. There's no merger. There's no This is not an issue. This is just business as usual. No need to pay attention. No, this is the quote unquote unified research, which is actually even beyond cooperation. Like, unified means it becomes one thing. You know, you could have a partnership, you could have collaboration. Unification is when two things become one thing. So this is beyond partnership. This is merger, unification. So, establishment of a United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative. Right, so this is the main point. It creates an office. It creates an initiative. It creates a organization that will perpetuate itself on its own volition. The Secretary of Defense, in collaboration with the Minister of Defense of Israel, shall establish a cooperative initiative to be known as the United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative to expand and accelerate bilateral defense technology research, development, testing, evaluation, coordination, and industrial cooperation by A, identifying jointly developed or Israeli origin technologies with operational utility for integration into the United States systems and programs of record, which again, you know, this will be spun by the people who support it as some sort of positive for America. Look, we're getting access. We're getting their technology in our systems. I don't want their technology in our systems. Other time Israeli technology has been in our systems, it's been used to spy on us. Why would we want that? That's the problem. Of course, it's being spun as a benefit to us, but it's a benefit to Israel having their technology, having their industry merge with our technology. They get the benefit of the profit that they get from us, you know, paying for the information or the technology. They get access to the technology as it's integrated into our systems. This is not good for us. There's nothing they have that we so desperately need and can't create ourselves. There's also nothing that they have that they shouldn't give us anyway because of the overwhelming protection that we give them. That's the other thing that upsets me about this is why are we treating them like a partner? They should be the subject. They shouldn't even have an option to withhold stuff from us. They only exist because of our mercy, because of our endless generosity to them. They don't even have a right to exist. They can't exist without our help, without American servicemen, you know, there to protect them, there to stand in the way and fight their battles for them. They wouldn't exist. So why do they get to have any technology that we don't get access to? Every single time any sort of novel technology comes out of Israel, America should be like, oh, thank you. And if they say no, oh, really? Oh, you don't want to give us that? Okay. Bye. They'll give us technology. They need us. We don't need them. Continuing, conducting collaborative research initiatives involving government, private sector, and academic institutions in the United States and Israel in a matter that protects sensitive technology and information and the national security interests of the United States and Israel. Again, I do not want Israelis collaborating with the government, our private sector, and certainly not the academic institutions in the United States. Well, why would we want Israeli infiltration to an even greater degree in our higher education? There's no argument for this. Unless you genuinely think Israelis are like beneficial to America in some way. Like, I'm trying to puzzle out, like, why would an American patriot support this? And like, if you actually, you know, fall for the lies Israelis tell about themselves, then maybe you would think that they're like special or something. They're not. Facilitating the transition of technologies from research and development into procurement and acquisition pathways, establishing framework for joint ventures, licensing agreement, and United States-based co-production and manufacturing partnerships with Israeli industry. Again, partnerships, transition, joint. I mean, it's just, yes, everything is being unified. It's all being melded into one another. And again, all of this will be done under the coordination of an office that once set up will not be going away anytime soon. And like a snowball rolling down the hill, the more it's integrated, the more access it'll have, the more it'll be able to expand its power and influence. Repeat, repeat, repeat. I mean, that's what's going to happen. Coordinating with relevant Department of Defense components, including Irregular Warfare Technological Support Directorate, Capability Development and Innovative Divisions, the Defense Innovation Unit, the United States-Israel Operations Technology Working Group, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA, the Missile Defense Agency and the United States Space Command, the military services to align efforts and avoid duplication and promoting joint training exercises and information sharing mechanisms to enhance operational readiness to deploy jointly developed technologies. Remember, like, think about this. We just read the article where the Iranians were reporting to J.D. Vance that the Israelis were spying on negotiations, and that Kushner and Witkoff were directly feeding information to Netanyahu during the negotiations. And remember, Israel tried to stop the MOU from coming out before it did. And they were mad that America wouldn't share the text of the MOU with them because they wanted to take the text and be able to present it on their own accord and present it with their own spin on it in order to try to, you know, gin up public outrage to put a stop to it. And we had to withhold it from them. This would prevent us withholding it from them. If this had been implemented before the negotiations, Israel would have been able to demand access to that information, and we would have had no way of withholding it from them. They would have had direct access to our sensitive information, meaning they would have used it to try to scuttle the peace process in direct opposition to our national interest. You can go back to the late 90s when they're selling our jets to China. You can go back to the 80s when they're selling our technology to the Soviet Union. You could go back to the Stingray devices under the first Trump administration, the tracking devices under the second Trump administration, the fact the Pentagon just raised the threat level of espionage from Israel to the highest critical level possible. Or you can look at the MOU and the negotiations with Iran, where repeatedly America's had to withhold information. J.D. Vance himself, I believe it was, or whoever it was, reported it, that they had to, you know, withhold information from the Israelis because they were convinced that the Israelis would kill the Iranian negotiators. In fact, America had to warn the Iranian negotiators that they were being targeted for death, and they had to take defensive measures. So you don't have to go back 20 years in the past. You don't have to go back 3 weeks in the past. Israel is at this very moment trying to use espionage against America to harm our interests in a war that we are doing on their behalf for Iran. So I ask again, why would we merge them more? Why would we marry ourselves to an even greater degree to this country who routinely and to this day sabotages us diplomatically when our interests diverge? Why? Why would we do that? There's no argument for it. In America's interest, America doesn't benefit from this. All we'd be doing here is opening up significantly more vulnerabilities for them to take advantage of. Joint training, total direct access to DARPA. Well, why? Why would we give them any of this stuff? Initiative domains. The initiative shall be carried out through the cooperative efforts in domains such as the following: counter unmanned systems, including aerial, maritime, and ground platforms, anti-tunneling and subterranean threats, missile and air defense technologies, including a Golden Dome for America, artificial intelligence, quantum, machine learning, and autonomous systems, directed energy and advanced sensing, cyber defense, electronic warfare and digital resilience, biotechnology, biomanufacturing, and medical defense, network integration, data fusion, and contested logistics, defense industrial base cooperation, manufacturing and co-production, other emerging technologies to address medium or long-term threats jointly agreed to by the United States and Israel. So again, just direct merging, you know, direct cooperative efforts in every single aspect of our defense industrial complex, every single part that they already dominate to a massive degree. Now they just want full, unrestricted, unrestrained access to all of our technology. It just goes on and on. We can keep up to this, but I don't think there's anything that necessarily jumps out other than, yeah, co-production agreements. There will be an annual report they'll have to make talking about how much they've done. But yeah, you can read it yourself. It says exactly what everybody criticizing it says. I don't know why people on the right are trying to spin this as if it's either nothing and doesn't matter or somehow beneficial to America. It's just not. So it shouldn't happen. It is just giving Israel direct access to our intelligence and military. And again, how many examples do you need of ways that Israel has used this exact type of access to make it to where Syria can't target their planes because the S-300 and 400 won't lock on to Israeli jets. You know, the Apollo gold pagers, like that. This is what Israel does. And I remind you, they say they're at war with us. They say America is the eighth front. They say that America is the new Rome and that they'll win against Rome this time. This is the way Israelis wage war, folks. That's what you need to understand. And you know what? I saw Matt Forney and others saying, yeah, this is no different than agreements we have against the UK and all these other, or with these, the UK and New Zealand, and all these other places. I don't think that's entirely true. I think we do share some information with them. That's also not a good thing, and we shouldn't do that. That's not actually a great argument. It's just a precedent, but it's not a good precedent. That should also probably be rolled back, considering the fact that those exact Five Eye country agreements are the thing that was used to circumvent constitutional restrictions to spying on American citizens and was instrumental in the Russiagate scandal manufactured to try to destroy Donald Trump. So, like, these things are always abused by the powers that be for their own benefit. Why would we create more of them? Nothing about intelligence sharing. Not one word. What are you talking about? Not one word about intelligence sharing? What? That's what this whole thing is. Nothing about hiding the amount of aid we give Israel. The bill explicitly requires regular transparency and progress reports to Congress. That's the point, though, isn't it? Isn't that the point? That right now they have to go to Congress to get the money, and this is resetting that relationship so they get the money and then they tell the Congress afterwards? Nothing about us unilaterally handing all of our tech to Israel. Again, we are the ones with the technology almost entirely. I guess all the stuff you people talk about reshoring manufacturing to America, except that we're opening up our market to Israel manufacturing as well. Are you suggesting that we can't sell? My God, there's so much, because like we can't sell things to Israel without allowing them direct access, partnership, unification with our intelligence and defense departments. What have we been doing this entire time? None of this is necessary. And this is another, like, there's certain things that you always see. One is just like, you know, saying it's not happening and you're stupid. But another one I saw that's similar between like what Matt Forney was saying and, J.D. Vance. And I'm sure there's a phrase for this, but J.D. Vance did it as well. And I didn't mention it when we played the clips, but you know, he goes, Israel's not the only country lobbying America. It's like nobody ever said it was. That's not an argument. Just like nobody ever said it was a unilateral thing that Israel would be getting all of our technology and we wouldn't be getting any from them. There has to be some sort of bilateral, you know, exchange. The difference is, for one thing, they shouldn't have technology they withhold from us because they only exist at our behest. So we should be able to demand access to everything they have since we use it for their benefit anyway. Two, we are under no obligation, and it benefits us not at all to provide them access to our research and development when we can just sell them the weapons afterwards. Of course, it's, you know, it gets a little complicated because we're selling them weapons that they buy with our money. So, you know, it's not even that that's a great benefit either. So just what are we doing here? Straw man. It's all straw man arguments. I don't like how much influence Israel has over America. Well, they're not the only country. Okay. And like, do you understand? Like, what I don't understand is how these arguments work, because they don't work in normal situations. If I say to you, hey, that guy's a murderer, would you turn to me and go, he's not the only murderer? Did I say he was? Does that mean him being a murderer is no longer bad because other people have also murdered? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But these are the types of things people say over and over and over again, and that are treated like valid arguments. Israel's not the only country to lobby America. Okay. Thanks for that little data point. Now respond to the question about Israel having influence in America over and above what is right or proper or appropriate and is significantly more than just about any other country you care to name. Do those other countries have lobbying efforts? Probably so, I guess. I don't know because it's not a constant, persistent, dominating effect of our entire political process. They don't routinely celebrate the fact that they control most of our government in the way that AIPAC does constantly. They don't brag about ousting people like Thomas Massie for daring to disagree with them on one simple thing. So what are you talking about? So why does it matter that Mozambique also has a lobbying arm? It's not the same. So why are you making that argument? In the same way, it's like America's not unilaterally giving everything we own over to America. Okay, so I guess it's fine then. I guess it's fine if not absolutely everything is being given to them directly and we're getting nothing in return. Oh, we're getting like almost nothing in return instead? What is this argument? What are we saying? What are you talking about? Bonkers. It really is beyond bonkers. See if there's anything else we have to say about this in particular, because we're coming to the end of the show here, and I got a lot of stuff I'm going to have to save for tomorrow, including an exploration of sexual morality in the modern age. That's all just absolutely crazy. But yeah, I guess we'll find out whether we like still have a country at the end of this. And look, it's not panicking. This is just the way it is. This is just what's actually happening. We just have people in government openly committing treason for the sake of a foreign nation. We started a war for the sake of that nation. We were able to oust a president of a college for the sake of that foreign nation. Seems like we can move heaven and earth. And there's no barriers or no precedents necessary. Anything they want is at our command and any barrier will be eradicated. But if we ever want anything for America, it's how dare you? Who do you think you are? Or it's absolutely, we'll definitely do that. And then just absolutely nothing happens. So at a certain point, we got to wake up to the threat that Israel poses. And like I said before, I really am the moderate position here. Maybe that's the argument that needs to be made. Like the absolute moderate position, like dead center right in the middle, is like Israel should no longer be our ally. We shouldn't support them. We shouldn't have anything to do with them. We should just cut them off and move on and just do what is right for America. Like that is my position. And incumbent in that, the next inevitable step would be that Israel would be destroyed by its neighbors, and I'm fine with that. That's the moderate position. Because the left of me wants to, like, murder all the Israelis. So, I'm just saying, stop. Just stop doing this. Just stop pushing this. Because you either listen to people like me, and we can move forward with Israel just like any other country, or you can try to do what you're doing and let the AOCs and the Mamdanis take over. And they really hate you. So, choice is yours, I guess.
Bigly took 2 years to do this, our great sponsor. I'm not bitching. It's amazing. They got the highest rated. We've published the studies, showed it to you, the big third-party testing firms. The highest quality, gravity-fed filters, cuts out all the thousands of different forever chemicals like atrazine and glyphosate to non-detectable levels, meaning zero, basically. Can't detect it. That's the highest rating. With the most beautiful stainless steel. 3-gallon system. You can get the stand if you want to. A lot of people don't even need the stand. Looks great in your kitchen, great at your business, but the most important thing is it cuts all these toxins out. This is the number one thing you should do for your family, for people, your coworkers. This is no more bottled water, no more, you dump swamp water in this, pool water, whatever, it cuts everything out, and it funds the operation. Everybody needs one of these. This is a home run. I am so impressed, because I've been bitching at Bigley. Like 2 years ago, we started, go, hey, we need this. Here's the ratings. This is the highest thing. I want stainless steel. You can go out and find the company, you know, the manufacturers. Go to the, I want the highest quality, lowest price. They're selling crap. They don't even have the good filters. This isn't even stainless steel. It's plastic. For more than this, get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. Commit to yourself to get the poisons out of the water. It's one of the biggest moves you can make to take control of your life, and it funds this operation. Order it now at thealexjonesstore.com. Take action. And there's a big sale that's going to end Sunday night at midnight, and that is Ultimate Life Force, the ultimate spike protein cardiovascular booster for everybody. That is 50% off. Bunch of other deals that are going to end soon at thealexjonesstore.com. Widest selection of Patriot apparel and more. And the live feeds of the show are at thealexjonesstore.com as well.
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.